Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
Our Miss Brooks. Suspense.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Fibber McGee and Molly.
The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah. Radio Theater.
In the air.
Dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind.
You know what our call letters WGN stand for, don't you?
WGN Radio Theater.
The special three-hour presentation.
With Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, about 8 minutes after 11 p.m. here on the WGN Radio Theater. I'm your host, Carl Amari. It is January 19th, and this is program 354 in the series. To my right, the vivacious Lisa Wolf. What's up, Lisa?
Hey, Carl. What's going on?
How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Kind of slippery and cold and snowy out there.
It's not slippery in here. We have a producer tonight, extraordinaire. We've got Ashley Byhan filling in. So thank you so much.
Yes,
we're so
we
happy
do.
To have you
Hi,
tonight.
Hi, Ashley.
Hi.
Well, we have classic radio shows, and it's going to be an interesting program because we're going to start things off with an hour-long Lux Radio Theater. We will break it into four parts. We'll do two parts in this hour, two parts in our next hour, and then we have a half-hour episode of the Lives of Harry Lime. Now, if you have ever seen the Third Man film, you know that Joseph Cotten and Orson Welles starred in that film. So we have a radio reenactment of that film, and it's one of the greatest films ever made, The Third Man, and it is on the Lux Radio Theater. Joseph Cotten will reprise his role in that program. Then, a little later, we're going to listen to a radio series that evolved because of that movie. It was a prequel to the movie called The Lives of Harry Lime. Orson Welles starred in that. So, sort of a Third Man night here on the WGN Radio Theater.
And I was going to mention, if you want to read more about that, you can check our Facebook page, and we have a fun fact about just that.
Yeah, absolutely right. And just go to Facebook and search WGN Radio Theater. But right now, it's time to play our game, Cat's Pride. Is it real or is it ridiculous?
Yes, our celebrity for the first hour is Kate Winslet.
Okay, heard
good
of her.
Good one. You've heard of her.
Yes,
so we're
I
all
have.
Good. Ashley, we're on board with that one.
I don't know who she is.
You Kate don't, Winslet? Really?
From Titanic?
Yeah, Titanic.
I've never seen that movie all the way through.
Actually, you resemble Kate Winslet. She's
there you go. You look exactly like her.
Beautiful girl. Yeah, you should check
her out. She's been in so many movies. If you look her up, you'll know who she is.
Yeah.
Check it out. Because you get to play. The prize is going to be the highly coveted desktop indoor weather station brought to you by American Weather Makers Heating and Cooling.
And what caller would you like?
We're going to go with caller six. So call now.
312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Call now. Play the game live on the air. We'll be right back.
Come on, baby. Let's get ridiculous.
Katie, we have her on the phone. Hi, how are you?
Great.
Good. Well, I'm guessing that you've heard of Kate Winslet because you're not like 12 years old.
Definitely.
Good. Do you want to play with us, Ashley, or just skip it?
I'll skip this one.
All right. No, you're Katie. You are playing. We'll go back to Ashley in hour two. All right, Katie. When Kate Winslet was 11, she starred in a commercial for Sugar Puffs. Is that real or ridiculous?
Real.
Carl, do you agree with her?
Yes, I believe that.
That is absolutely correct. It is real.
It's real?
It's real. Oh, he's got some good sound effects, I tell you. Ashley, that's Ashley, that was part of his what did I buy that for you for?
$10. This cost $10, this thing.
I'm a big spender.
She's a big spender, that Lisa Wolf.
All right. For the film.
Christmas present.
Wait a second.
I gave her like a $200 gift certificate to Neiman Marcus.
Wait, just to
and
be
I got
clear.
A $10.
Wait a minute.
$10.
Just to be clear,
sound.
I put that inside of a Lululemon bag.
That's true.
Okay.
I'm only joking
just
around.
To be clear.
Thank you.
Okay. For the film Little Children, one of my favorites.
Oh, man.
She earned her fifth Academy Award nomination. Katie, what do you think? Is that real or ridiculous?
Real.
Real? Carl?
I don't think anybody has gotten five nominations. I'm going to say ridiculous.
Well, it is real. You should go with
what?
Katie. She knows her
so
stuff.
So here's for Katie. And here's for me. Oh, wait a minute.
You know, Katie, we're very high tech here in the WGN studios. Okay, number three, the final statement. She has a son named Bear Blaze. Bear, B-E-A-R, Blaze. Is that real or ridiculous?
Real.
I say real also.
It is real. He is named Bear Blaze Winslet. That is absolutely right. Katie, you got 3 out of 3. That is actually rare around
she's
here.
She's good. I like my steak medium, but anyway.
Well, it's very rare. You never got 3 out of 3. Katie, you have won the desktop indoor weather station. It is brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling. They are the 60-minute man. Give them a call at 855-955-HVAC. But Katie, you've got it. Congratulations, and thank you so much for calling in and starting off our great show tonight.
Way to go, Katie.
Thank you. Bye
thank
now.
You.
Take
Bye.
Care.
All right. Katie's a big winner, and our listeners are going to be big winners because we have an hour-long Lux Radio Theater presentation. And as you know, these were movie recreations on radio. It was the longest-running and most prestigious show from the golden age of radio. There were the biggest guest stars on this. In fact, the movie stars that were in the movie usually reprise their roles. I mean, not every time, but almost every time. Came to radio in 1934. Cecil B. DeMille was the host from 1936 until 1945. That's how big this show is. They were able to get the biggest director on the planet to be the host of this show. Now, some stars were paid upwards of $5,000 to appear on the Lux Radio Theater. Single performance back in the 1930s. Wow. Big dough. Clark Gable, Cary Grant, Frank Sinatra, John Wayne, Humphrey Bogart, Orson Welles, many, many more. It was sponsored by Lux Soap. There was 926 shows produced until 1955. It also made a transition to television with James Mason as the host. And on this edition, we have the third man, a very famous movie. Joseph Cotten and Orson Welles were the star. It's considered one of the greatest movies ever made. You're going to hear it now, a radio dramatization. We'll do this in four parts, two in this hour, two in the next hour. Let's go back to April 9th, 1951, for part one of The Third Man, starring Joseph Cotten on the Lux Radio Theater.
Lux presents Hollywood. Lever Brothers Company, the makers of Lux Toilet Soap, bring you the Lux Radio Theater, starring Joseph Cotten and Evelyn Keyes in The Third Man. Ladies and gentlemen, your producer, Mr. William Keeley.
Greetings from Hollywood, ladies and gentlemen. In tonight's play, The Third Man, we have a perfect setting for a murder mystery. Post-war Europe, filled with spies, intrigue, and black markets. Into this atmosphere of cunning and subterfuge comes an American, only to take up the trail of the unknown murderer of his friend. A trail that leads him into hazardous and chilling adventure. As the stars of this suspenseful David O. Selznick production, we have in his original role one of the finest actors of screen and radio, Joseph Cotten, and as his co-star, charming Evelyn Keyes. The Third Man not only has a plot to hold everyone's interest, but one of the most haunting of musical themes, played on a most unusual instrument, the zither. Now that spring is here, it won't be long before we hear another unforgettable theme, as Lux lovely girls everywhere begin the wedding march. And women who give their complexions daily Lux toilet soap care will, of course, be among the loveliest of brides. Now the curtain rises on The Third Man, starring Joseph Cotten as Holly Martins and Evelyn Keyes as Anna Schmidt.
When the funeral was over, I left the cemetery with a British officer, Major Calloway. He offered to drive me back into town. Then he said he thought I needed a drink. The Major was right.
Yes, you've had a bit of a shock, Mr. Martins. You say you arrived in Vienna only this morning?
Just in time to go to the funeral.
You came to Vienna to attend the funeral?
Came here to go to work. A friend of mine offered me a job, publicity work for some kind of charity he was running. Well, my friend's dead.
Harry Lime offered you a job?
Best friend I ever had.
You're a writer, you say?
Ever hear of The Lone Rider of Santa Fe? Death at Double X Ranch?
I can't say that I have.
Well, don't get any ideas about money. I'm broke. Harry even sent me the plane ticket.
No money at all?
Little, not very much.
Where are you staying?
I was going to stay with him. It was the porter at his apartment house who told me.
Told you what, Mr. Martins?
About the accident. Harry had been killed.
He didn't have many friends, did he? I mean, well, at the cemetery, for instance, a handful of people.
Well, who were they? Do you know them?
I know who they are, yes. A Dr. Winkle, Baron Kurtz, a girl named Anna Schmidt.
Oh, what a waste. A shame.
What?
His dying like that.
The best thing that ever happened to him.
But...
Martins, your friend Harry Lime was about the worst racketeer that ever made a dirty living in this city.
So that's what you are, policeman.
This is the international zone. Your country, too, has military police here. So do the French and the Russians. We try to work together.
Some petty racket with gasoline or something. You pin it on a dead man, just like a cop.
It wasn't gasoline, Mr.
So
Martins.
So it was tires or saccharin. Why don't you catch a few murderers for a change?
Murder was part of Harry Lime's racket.
You...
Sergeant Penn.
Yes, sir?
Drive Mr. Martins to Sacher's Hotel.
Very good, sir.
Nothing elegant, Mr. Martins. Military personnel mostly, but you...
Now, just a minute, Callahan.
Calloway, I'm English.
You're not going to close your files at a dead man's expense.
Oh, so you're going to find me the real criminal. Sounds like one of your stories.
Oh, when I'm finished with you, you'll leave Vienna. You'll look so silly.
You said you had very little cash. Here. Take this army money. It'll see you through until tomorrow, and we'll hold a seat for you on the plane. All right, Sergeant. Take him to Zarka's.
They gave me a room on the second floor, and I'd hardly closed the door when the telephone rang. Hello?
Mr. Martin?
Who's this?
Baron Kurtz.
Who?
Baron Kurtz. I was a friend of Harry Lime.
Oh, yes. I'd like very much to meet you, Baron. Can you come over here?
Austrians are not allowed in your hotel, Mr. Martin. Could we not meet at the Mozart Cafe? It is just around the corner.
How'll I know you?
I will carry one of your books. Harry gave it to me. The Oklahoma Kid.
I'll be right over.
Thank you, Mr. Martin.
I am delighted to meet you, sir. What would you like? Tea, coffee?
Coffee, please, black.
Zwei Schwarze, bitte. It is wonderful how you keep the tension.
Tension?
The suspense. In this book, I mean.
Oh. So you were a friend of Harry's, Baron Kurtz?
I think his best, except you, of course.
Now, the police have a crazy notion he was mixed up in some sort of racket.
Mr. Martins, who in Vienna is not? We all sell cigarettes and that kind of thing. I have done things that would have seemed unthinkable before the war.
I'm afraid the police meant more than that.
And they get some rather absurd ideas sometimes. Poor Harry. Where he is now, he will not mind.
Even so, I'm not going to leave it at this. Will you help me?
I wish I could. But I am an Austrian. I have to be very careful. I'm afraid I cannot help you. Except with advice, of course. Advice.
I want to know how he was killed.
With the truck? He was struck by the truck.
I mean, how? How did it happen?
We will drink our coffee, Mr. Martins. It is not far from here where it happened. We will walk there, and I will show you. We walked out of the apartment, Mr. Martins, there where the porter is sweeping. We started toward the corner when a friend of Harry's called to him from over there.
That square across the street?
Exactly. Harry stepped off the curb and started over. The truck came from that direction.
That quickly?
That quickly. His friend and I picked him up. We carried him to this very spot. Even at the end, his thoughts were of you.
What did he say?
I cannot remember the exact words. He was anxious I should look after you when you arrived.
The porter told me he died instantaneously.
Well, before the ambulance could reach us.
No. There were only you and this friend of his. Who was he?
A Romanian, Mr. Popescu.
I'd like to talk to him.
He has left Vienna.
Excuse me, I want to ask the porter something. Did you know Mr. Lime well?
Mr. Lime... Yes.
You remember me. This morning I was here.
Yes, I remember you.
Well, who used to visit Mr. Lime?
Visit? Was will er wissen?
Er will wissen, wer hier verkehrt.
So, es kommen so viele Leute
Hallo.
Hier, dass ich... Ja, Mitzi?
Kannst du herkommen?
Ja, einen Moment.
Nicht später, jetzt. Du musst am Telefon.
Please, you will excuse me.
Baron Kurtz, who was at the funeral beside you?
You saw them. Only his doctor, Dr. Winkle, and the British officer.
Wasn't a girl there?
Oh, yes. Some girl of the Josefstadt Theater. You know how Harry was.
You don't know her name?
I do not think I ever heard it. Mr. Martins, you'd do better to think of yourself now.
I'll be all right.
Of course. And you will forgive me if I run along now?
If I should want to talk with you again, Baron...
You will find me at the Casanova Club every night. One has to work, you know. And I'm so glad to have met you, Mr. Martins, and your book, a masterpiece of suspense. Such a good cover, too, I think.
Mr. Martins, isn't it?
It's my key, please. 226.
Yes, sir.
Oh, how can I get a ticket for the Josefstadt Theater for tonight?
Well, I think we can arrange that. Speaking of tickets, sir.
Huh?
Major Calloway's compliments, sir. And a ticket for tomorrow's plane.
Oh, well, you can tell Major Calloway that I won't need it. I've decided to stay for a while.
Oh?
Yeah.
Yes, Mr. Martins. I will tell him.
That night, I went to the Josefstadt Theater. After the performance, a pack of cigarettes got me past the doorman to Anna Schmidt's dressing room.
Holly Martins? That name is supposed to mean something to me?
I thought perhaps Harry told you about me.
No, he never told me about his friends.
I enjoyed the play very much. You were awfully good.
You are not here to talk about my performance.
No, about Harry. Had you known him long?
Yes, but there is nothing really to say, is there? Nothing.
I saw you at the cemetery this morning.
I'm sorry. I did not notice much.
You were in love with him, weren't you?
I do not know. How can you know a thing like that afterwards? I do not know anything anymore. Except I want to be dead, too.
I was talking to another friend of Harry's, Baron Kurtz. Do you know him?
I have met him. He brought me some money when Harry died. He said Harry had been anxious at the last moment.
He said Harry spoke of me, too. Seems to show he wasn't in much pain.
Dr. Winkle told me that.
Dr. Winkle?
The doctor Harry used to go to. He was passing just after it happened.
His own doctor just passing?
Yes. They said it was not the driver's fault. Harry had often said what a careful driver he was.
The man in the truck was Harry's driver? Well, I just don't understand all this. His own driver knocking him down, his own doctor just passing by.
I have wondered about it 100 times. But what difference does it make? He's dead.
But if it wasn't an accident...
I'm sorry, I cannot stay here. The manager does not like us to use the electricity.
Would you come with me?
Where?
To Harry's apartment.
At this hour?
Well, the porter there saw it happen.
Well, then why worry?
You know that porter?
Yes. All right, Mr. Martins. We will speak to the porter.
Better we talk inside in Herr Lime's apartment. Sehen Sie? Da. Gleich da drunten, Fräulein. Da herunten ist es passiert. Oh,
what's he saying?
Come over to the window. He says it happened right down there.
Down there,
you,
yes.
You saw it happen?
Not saw. Heard. Huh. I heard the brakes. Then I saw them carry the body to the other side of the Emperor Joseph statue.
Why didn't they bring him in the house? Could he have been conscious?
Conscious? Das soll ich auch noch wissen.
Conscious? Well, was he still alive?
Alive? He could not have been alive, not with his head in the way it was.
Well, then how could he have talked about me, about this lady here? Why didn't you say all this at the inquest?
It is better to say nothing. I was not the only one.
No, who else?
3 men carry your friend to that statue down there.
Yeah. Kurtz?
Yes.
This Romanian?
Yes.
Who else? You mean the doctor?
No. There was a 3rd man. He come later, after they carried him to the statue.
Well, who?
Well, I did not see his face. He might have been just anybody.
Just anybody? I was told there were only 2 men there. You've got to tell this story to the police.
Police? Well, why police? This is alles Blödsinn, was Sie da sagen. This is all crazy. It was an accident.
Was it? You don't know it was an accident. But you only saw a dead man and three men carrying
him. I should listen to my wife, keep my mouth shut, say nothing.
Suppose I take your evidence to the police.
I have no evidence. It is not my business.
Make it your business.
Fräulein Schmidt.
We had better leave, Mr. Martins.
Well, can I take you home?
It does not matter, if you want to.
Outside in the corridor was a little boy. He was bouncing a rubber ball. Looked up and stared at me.
Hansel, come to park here. You must to bed.
Well, what was that all about?
He says you do not like the porter.
Yes, he says you do not like me. Maybe he is right. Good night, Mr. Martins.
All right, that's part one of The Third Man, going back to April 9th, 1951, starring Joseph Cotten on the Lux Radio Theater. More after these words.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Thanks, David. Welcome back. Hey, Lisa, real quick before we get back into Lux Radio Theater, I want to remind all of our listeners, last week we did something special. We had a $1. For $1, you can join the Classic Radio Club. You can, for the first month, you'll get your 10 classic radio shows for only $1 via digital download, or you can get 5 CDs with 10 classic radio shows for $1, but you also have to pay a little shipping and handling, $4.99 for that. So if you want to learn more about this, just go to classicradioclub.com. And if you do want to join for only $1 for the first month, you do have to use the promo code RADIO. If you don't use RADIO, it won't give you that special offer. And we're going to do this for the next 50 people that join tonight. 50 people that go to classicradioclub.com could join by putting the promo code RADIO.
And the good thing to remember about this club is it is a club, but if you choose not to continue and you want to cancel at any time, that is your prerogative and that is no problem.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
We want to make it very user-friendly. If you love it, terrific, you'll continue. And if you don't love it, you can cancel at any time.
That's right. Try it for a month for only $1.
Right.
You can get 10 shows digitally emailed to you along with liner notes about those 10 shows for only $1 for the first month. And if you want them on 5 CDs, then you would just have to pay the $1 plus shipping and handling.
There's a lot of information. Go to the website, classicradioclub.com, if you have any questions. Of course, we've got a text in line, 312-981-7200, or we have a Facebook page. Look us up, WGN Radio Theater. Make sure to like us. And, of course, you could always communicate with us that way.
That's right. All right. Now, though, it's part two of The Third Man on the Lux Radio Theater.
I took on a home, a small apartment building. We paused a moment in the entrance.
I have been thinking, leave Vienna, Mr. Martins.
You're not the first person who's told me
that. There is nothing you can do here.
But if I do find something, may I look you up again?
Oh, you know where I work, you know where I live, but I...
Suddenly the door in front of us flung open, a woman. She pushed me aside, talking to Anna excitedly.
She's
talking about
the police. They're upstairs searching my room.
I followed Anna to her room. In it were Sergeant Payne and Major Calloway.
You're getting around, aren't you, Mr. Martin?
What the devil is this, Calloway? Pinning things on girls now?
And Miss Schmidt, I should like to see your papers, please.
Don't you give him anything.
Here, my passport.
Thank you. You were born in Salzburg of Austrian parents?
Yes.
How much did you pay for this passport, Miss Schmidt? Well, it doesn't matter. I'm afraid I'll have to keep it for a while. Give Miss Schmidt a receipt, Sergeant. Oh, and for these letters, too.
Yes, sir?
I suppose it wouldn't interest you to know that Harry Lyme was murdered. No, you're too busy. You haven't even bothered to get the complete evidence.
My letters, must you take them?
They'll be returned, miss.
But they're private papers.
Oh, that's all right, miss. We're used to it. Like doctors.
There was a third man there. I suppose that doesn't sound peculiar to you, Calloway.
I'm not interested in how a racketeer like Lyme was killed. The only important thing is that he's dead. I'm sorry, Miss Schmidt.
Must you take those letters? They're Harry's. They're only love letters.
They'll be returned as soon as we've examined them.
Harry never did anything. Only a small thing once, out of kindness.
And what was that?
My passport. You have it in your hand.
Oh. You'll have to come along with us, Miss Schmidt.
You're not locking her up.
Oh, Martins, be sensible. You don't know what you're mixing in. Get the next plane.
As soon as I get to the bottom of this, I'll get the next plane.
Death is at the bottom of everything, Martins. Leave death to the professional.
You mind if I use that line in my next Western? You can't chuck me out, Major. My papers are in order. Look, is anything really wrong with your passport?
It was forged.
Why?
What, the Russians would claim me? I come from Czechoslovakia, yes, and if
don't
I...
Don't mind, Miss Schmidt. Good night, Martins.
I stood on the sidewalk as they drove off. Then I remembered the doctor, Dr. Winkle. I got his address from a telephone book and hailed a taxi cab.
What can I do for you, Mr. Martins?
I realize this is no time of night to be calling, Doctor, but... Well, we were both friends of Harry Lyme.
I was his medical advisor, yes.
And I want to find out all I can.
I can tell you very little. He was dead when I arrived.
Yeah. Well, who was with him?
Two friends of his.
Two? Two, are you sure?
Quite sure, Mr. Martins.
Could he have been at all conscious?
I understand he was, for a short time. But I was not there when it happened. My opinion is limited to the causes of death. Have you any reason to be dissatisfied?
Well, is it possible that his death might have been not accidental? Could he have been pushed, Doctor?
I cannot give an opinion. The injuries to the head and skull would have been the same, and now I'm afraid I
yes,
must...
Yes, of course. Thank you.
Well, Sergeant, come in, come in.
I followed Martin, sir. He went to Dr. Winkle's home. Then he came back here.
Here?
He's down on the street, sir. Waiting for Miss Schmidt, I would imagine.
She's in the other office. Bring her in. Oh, I showed her forged passport to the French, the Americans, and the Russians.
Yes, sir.
Our Russian friend, Captain Brodsky, is very interested. He wants us to hold it until he can talk to Colonel Polikov. Well, bring her in, Sergeant.
My papers. You have not returned everything, have you?
I'm sorry. We'll need your passport for a while longer. Miss Schmidt, you knew Harry Lyme very well, didn't you?
We loved each other. Is that what you mean?
Would you look at this photograph, please? Do you know this man also?
I have never seen him.
Perhaps you've heard of him. Joseph Harbin? He works in a military hospital.
No.
Miss Schmidt, it's stupid to lie to me. I'm in a position to help you considerably.
I am not lying. You are wrong about Harry. You are wrong about everything.
In one of his letters, Harry Lyme asked you to telephone Joseph at the Casanova Club. What was the message?
It was not important. Something about meeting Harry at his home.
Joseph Harbin disappeared the day you telephoned. Now, we've got to find him, and you can help us.
What can I tell you but that you have got everything upside down? Am I under arrest?
No. No, we'll send for you when we want you.
Thank you.
That American is still waiting for you out there. He won't do you much good, Miss Schmidt.
No.
No. Good night, Miss Schmidt.
She saw me waiting under the street lamp in front of the government building. She would have gone on her way if I hadn't stopped her. I suggested a drink at the Casanova Club.
Good evening. Well, you have found out my little secret, Mr. Martins. The Baron Kurtz, a violin player in a cheap cafe. Good evening, Miss Schmidt.
Good evening.
You have proved the police to be wrong, Mr. Martins?
No, not yet.
Mr. Popesco is here tonight.
Oh, I thought you said he'd left Vienna.
He is back now. I will bring him here to your table.
You have not done enough for tonight.
But the porter said three men carried the body, and two of them are here.
You, of course, know Miss Schmidt. Mr. Popesco, Mr. Martin.
How do you do?
How do you do? Any friend of Harry's is a friend of mine.
There. Now I leave you together.
Mr. Popesco, I understand you were with Harry when the truck came.
Oh, it was a terrible thing. I was just crossing the road. He and the Baron were on the sidewalk. Maybe if I had not called to him, he stepped off to meet me, and I have never seen a man killed before.
I think there's something funny about the whole thing.
Funny?
Something wrong.
Of course there was. It was so insane for a man like Harry Lyme to be killed in a street accident.
That's all you meant?
But what else, Mr. Martin?
Who was the third man?
Now, what men would you be referring to, please?
I was told that a third man helped you in Kurt's carrion.
A third man?
Hmm.
Who could have told you a story like that?
The porter.
He saw the accident? The porter?
He saw three men carrying the body.
I do not seem to recall the porter at the police inquiry.
Well, he doesn't want to get involved.
Involved? It is his duty to give evidence, even though he remembered wrong. He told you more, Mr. Martin?
That Harry was dead before you got him to the statue. Somebody's lying, Mr. Popescu.
Oh, no, not necessarily. The
British police say Harry was mixed up in some racket.
Impossible. Harry had a great sense of duty, yes, Miss Schmidt?
I am afraid I have not been listening.
Is there anything else, Mr. Martin?
No. Thanks for stopping by.
It was my pleasure. Good night, Miss Schmidt.
Good night.
This is a nice girl, Mr. Martin, but she ought to go careful in Vienna. A city like this. Everybody ought to be careful.
The next morning, I went to Harry's apartment house. That little boy with the rubber ball was playing on the sidewalk.
Sie suchen den Portier? Heißt dem Keller?
Yeah, no doubt about it, Sonny. You're 100% right.
Haben Sie gestern gehört?
Yeah.
Sie haben mit dem Portier...
You want of me now? Is it so important always to ask me questions?
Yes, it is.
I am not a bad man. I would like to tell you something.
Then how did a car, a truck...
Shh! Not now, not here. What? My wife, if she thinks I tell you anything...
All right, but when?
Come tonight. Early tonight. My wife goes out.
But why does it have to be...
Shh! Tonight. You come here tonight.
Sarista?
Does that mean come in?
Oh, yes, come in.
Hope you don't mind. I have something to tell you. The porter's going to talk to us again tonight.
Oh, need we go through it all again?
Well, I'd manage by myself, then. You'll be at the theater, I suppose.
No, we do three plays a week. I do not appear again until Thursday.
Then why don't you want to... Oh, bad day.
It is always bad about this time. Harry used to stop by around 6. I have been frightened before of being alone, without friends, without money. But I have never known anything like this. Please, tell me about him.
Tell you what?
Oh, anything. When did you see him last? What did you do?
We didn't make much sense. We drank too much. Once he tried to steal my girl.
Where is she?
Oh, that was many years ago.
Tell me more.
Well, it's very difficult. You knew Harry. We didn't do anything very amusing. He just made everything seem like, I don't know, like a lot of fun.
Was he clever when he was a boy?
I suppose so. He could fix anything.
Harry fixed my papers for me. He heard the Russians were repatriating people like me who come from Czechoslovakia. He knew the right person right away for forging the stamps.
When he was 14, he taught me 3 card tricks. That's growing up fast.
Oh, never grew up. The world grew up around him, that's all. And buried him.
No, Anna, no. Don't. You'll fall in love again.
I do not want to. Never. I do not want to. If we have to see the porter, we had better go.
Well, a moment ago, you didn't want to see the porter.
We are both in it, Harry.
Holly. Holly Martin. Remember?
I am sorry.
It's all right. You might at least get my name right.
You know, you ought to find yourself a girl.
Yeah, that's what I keep telling myself. It was dark when we turned the corner of Harry Street. We were still half a block away when Anna noticed the crowd milling around the entrance. There was an ambulance at the curb.
An accident. Another accident.
Wait here. Let me see what it's all about. What's the matter? What is lost?
The portier is umgebracht worden.
I don't understand.
And murdered. The portier... The
porter?
The porter dead. Somebody kills the porter.
The man.
Hans, so wie viel mal muss ich dir sagen, von hier wegzustehen?
Der war's.
Was meinst du?
Der war's.
Suddenly everyone was silent. They were staring at me and drawing back, and that boy pointing his finger at me and shouting.
I was talking to saying, there's the murder, murder, murder.
I didn't have to understand German to know what he meant. The porter had been murdered, and the boy was saying, I killed him. Suddenly, the car became alive again. I grabbed out and we left. It was Anna who said we didn't have to run anymore. The alley behind us was empty. No one was up.
They are afraid. Like everyone in Vienna, afraid, even of you.
He was afraid, too. The porter. Now he's dead.
But the boy, why did the boy say that
you... I don't know why.
What are you going to do? By now they have told the police they will be looking for you.
I'm not quite sure what I should do.
Well, then be sensible. Tell Major Calloway.
Calloway? Maybe you're right. You.
I will go with you.
Well, who's being sensible now? You shouldn't even be seen with me. Here, take a taxi and go home. I'd better not see you again.
I agree with you, Mr. Martins. Good night.
I told you to leave, Martins. You're lucky you even got here alive. You've been blundering around with the worst bunch of racketeers in Vienna. Your precious Harry's friends. And now you're wanted for murder.
Well, put down drunk and disorderly too, Major Calloway.
Oh, stop behaving like a fool.
I'm only an amateur fool. You're the professional. You've been shaking your cap and bells all over Vienna.
I think it's time you heard the facts, Mr. Martins. I don't want another murder in this case, and you were born to be murdered. Have you ever heard of penicillin? In Vienna, there hasn't been enough penicillin to go round. There are a nice little trade started up. Stealing penicillin from the hospitals, diluting it to make it go further, and selling it to the patients. You know what that means? It
means you were too busy chasing a few tubes of penicillin to investigate a homicide.
These were homicides. Men with gangrenous legs. Women in childbirth. And there were children, too. They used some of this diluted penicillin against meningitis. This is the racket Harry Lime organized.
Calloway, you haven't shown me one shred of evidence.
No, we're just coming to that. Here. This is a photograph of a man called Harbin, a medical orderly at the General Hospital. He worked for Lyme. He helped steal the penicillin from the laboratories. We forced him to give information to us, which led us as far as Kurtz and Lyme.
But you didn't arrest them.
Our evidence wasn't complete. It might have spoiled our chances of getting the others.
I'd like a word with this Harbin fellow.
Would you, Mr. Martin?
Yeah.
So would I. He disappeared 4 days ago. Well, we'll have a look at Baron Kurtz. We know for a fact that Lyme met Kurtz a little over a year ago. Well, now you know the facts, Mr. Martins. They turn my stomach.
How could he have done it? How could Harry have done it?
How? 70 pounds for a tube of penicillin? Hmm. Oh, you go back to the hotel, Mr. Martin. Stay in your room. About the porter, I'll fix that with the Austrian police, but I can't be responsible for you out on the streets.
I'm not asking you to.
I am sorry, Martin.
Still got that plane ticket?
It'll be at the hotel in the morning.
Well, this time, I think I'll use it.
All right, that's part two of The Third Man, starring Joseph Cotten on the Lux Radio Theater. More after these words. Yes. Lisa, I'm hungry, so you know what?
How about I get you a pizza?
No, we're going to stop at Woodman's.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Because they're open 24 hours. So we're going to stop at Woodman's.
Right
on
now?
On our way home.
I thought you were going to leave now.
No, on our way home, and I'm going to get some food because I'm hungry.
What do you have in mind?
Well, the great thing about Woodman's is all of their locations are open 24 hours a day. So we're going to get off the air 2 o'clock, and Lisa and I carpool.
Does that mean we're going grocery shopping together?
We're going to go grocery shopping.
Like a married couple?
They say you're not supposed to go grocery shopping when
you're
hungry. Because you spend way, way more money. But you know what? At Woodman's, it's okay because Woodman's has low prices in every aisle every day. And here's another great thing about Woodman's. When you shop there, just take a photo of your Woodman's receipt, and you can email it to me at Woodman's, WGN, at gmail.com. That's Woodman's, WGN, at gmail.com. And then I will send you 12 classic radio shows via digital download to the email that you emailed me at.
That sounds like a plan, other than the fact that we're going grocery shopping together.
Yeah,
other than
we
that,
are.
It sounds terrific.
We're going to go grocery shopping. And Woodman's has 16 locations, 12 in the Wisconsin state, and then 4 in Illinois. And those are in Buffalo Grove, Carpentersville, North Aurora, and Rockford. And I am hungry, so I'm stopping at Woodman's.
So we're heading to Buffalo Grove.
That's right. Absolutely. All right. In our next hour, we will tune in to parts 3 and parts 4 of The Third Man, starring Joseph Cotten on the Lux Radio Theater going back to 1951. Then after that, in our third hour, from 1 a.m. to 2 o'clock in the morning, we will tune in to The Lives of Harry Lime, Orson Welles playing Harry Lime on that series. And what happened, very interesting, the radio series, I should say this movie, was so popular that radio syndicator Frederick W. Ziv approached Orson Welles and said, you know what, I'd like to do a radio series based on your character, Harry Lime, from the Third Man movie. But the problem was, Harry Lime dies in the movie, and so it's like, okay, how do you do that? Well, they decided they're going to do a prequel. So The Lives of Harry Lime, which we'll hear in Hour 3, is of the adventures of Harry Lime prior to the movie The Third Man. So I thought we're going to have like a Third Man night here on the WGN Radio Theater. So stick around for all of that. But right now, it's time for news. The Steve Cochran Show celebrates the most valuable person on the planet. Weekday mornings at 720 on 720 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. It's midnight. Time for the news. Here's David Jennings.
You simply take a favorite today, and you flavor it here with just a note or two of blue harmony. To
watch music choices by Ashley Byhan.
Yes, she is a little music wonder woman.
Well, she's a wonder woman.
Sounds like Bing Crosby there.
Yeah.
Trying to think who the other person is, though. Bing Crosby, who else? Do you know?
Long ago. Isn't that you, Carl? Start to sway,
getting hot. I don't know who the other person is, though. I'm trying to figure it out.
Gary Crosby.
It's Bing it's Bing and Gary, the two brothers. Okay, cool. Nice. I like. All right, Lisa, you know what? Guess what?
What?
Before we get into part 3 of The Third Man, we're going to play our game.
Is it real or is it ridiculous?
Yeah,
and we're
going to
let... Well, I don't know. Well, I do know, but I'm not telling you. We're going to let Ashley play with us because she's heard that the celebrity this hour, it is Christian Bale. So I think we're on board.
I'm Batman.
Yeah,
I'm Batman.
Was that you? I didn't know who that was.
You thought it was really. You thought it was really.
I thought it was really him. Yeah,
I know you did.
So
I'm Batman.
Oh, I didn't know where that was coming from. I'm like looking around. Now I know.
I'm gonna haunt your dreams.
You sound exactly like Christian.
Know,
you kind of look like him too.
I know.
Really
I get that
similar,
all the time.
Don't you think, Ashley?
Mm-hmm. I get. You know, this hour and next hour, a lot of people mistake me for Christian Bale and then Brad Pitt for next hour.
Yeah. You've been peeking into my notes.
Mm-hmm.
I certainly
no,
hope not.
No, I heard you say who
no.
it was.
Christian Bale, the prize is going to be a Never Measure. That's Christian Bale, all right. So it's going to be great, and we are going
to be great.
It's going to be great. And we're going to go with caller 3. So you should call right now at 312-981-7200. Be caller 3 and play Is It Real or Is It Ridiculous with us.
All right, we'll be right back. Come on, baby. Let's get ridiculous. Let's get ridiculous.
All right, we've got Helen on the phone. Hey, Helen.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Just fine, thank you.
Good.
How's Carl doing?
Hey, good.
Carl,
Helen.
How are you?
I'm pretty darn good.
That's good.
We're going to see if Carl can actually get three right.
Oh, what is that? We have like echo. I wonder if that... Helen, can you lower your radio? I'm not sure if that's... Your radio.
I don't have the radio.
All right, okay.
I'm in another room.
I'm pretty sure it's Curtis. He's got something going there.
All
so.
Right, here we go.
All right, Carl, let's see if you can do this. Okay?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right, Christian Bale is the celebrity. Number one, his first acting role was a 1982 commercial for Hershey's. Is that real or ridiculous?
Oh, that's a good question. I'd say that's real.
All right. I'm going to say ridiculous.
Ashley, what do you think?
I think Helen's right. I think it's real.
Well, this one time, it's ridiculous. Carl is right on
this
that one.
This is for me. And this is for you guys.
We're so technically advanced. It was for a fabric softener, his first commercial.
See, I got one.
You got one. Okay, let's try it again. Helen, his father was a circus performer. Is that real or ridiculous?
I'm going to say that's ridiculous.
Carl?
Circus performer?
That's what I said.
Ridiculous. I'm going to go with Helen on this one.
I don't know. I was wrong the first time. I'll go with Carl.
All right, so
everybody says ridiculous, and it is ridiculous. But I will tell you that his mom was a circus performer, and that's where I got that statement from. So, well, so close, but you guys are all right.
Man,
number
I'm on a
three.
Roll here.
You've got two. That's a real big record for Carl. All right, third one. He owns horses, pigs, and chickens. Is that real or ridiculous?
I guess I'd like to know if he lives on a farm, but I'm going to say that's ridiculous, too.
All right.
I'm going to agree with Helen and say it's ridiculous.
Okay. Ashley?
What do you think, Ashley?
Well, the first two are ridiculous, so I'm going to go real.
It's ridiculous. I gave you all ridiculous. It was just kind of, you know, I saw Helen and I thought she would appreciate all ridiculous. Helen, you did a great job. You did pretty well too, Carl.
Yeah, I got all three right.
That's a record, I'm pretty sure. Helen, you've won the Never Measure. You can easily center, level, and hang your wall decorations fast. No need to use a measuring tape or calculate fractions. It's veteran owned, made in the USA, and you can get yours at nevermeasure.com. But we're going to send you one for free, Helen, for playing the game. I have a Never Measure, and I use it, and I love it. So I hope you appreciate it.
I will, because I've got a couple more pictures to hang, and I was having a hard time doing it freehand, so I'm looking forward to it.
Perfect. Don't you hate when they're just a little tilted to the right?
Sure.
It's the worst. Well, thank you. Well, hang on for hanging those pictures. Hold on, it'll be there soon.
All right. Thanks, Helen. Appreciate you. And, you know, I got three right.
You did.
Three in a row.
You did.
I mean, so, and...
Not bad.
Not bad. All right. You know what else is not bad?
Ashley?
Well, her too, but Lux Radio Theater. We're listening to The Third Man, Joseph Cotten, starring this. Let's go back to April 9th, 1951, for part three now of The Third Man on the Lux Radio Theater.
Martins.
Thanks.
I thought you were going to Major Galloway.
That's where I've been.
You said you were not going to see me again.
I'm not. I just wanted to say goodbye. I'm going back home.
Why?
It's what you've always wanted, all of you. Cat? I didn't know you had a cat. Kitty? Kitty, kitty? What's the matter? Don't you want to play?
I have better let him out.
He's not very sociable, is he?
He liked only Harry. What made you decide so suddenly? Or did Galloway tell you?
Tell me?
About Harry.
Do you know?
I also saw Galloway this afternoon. Harry is better dead. I knew he was mixed up, but not like that.
I knew him for 20 years. At least I thought I knew him. Suppose he was laughing at fools like us all the time.
He liked to laugh.
70 pounds a tooth. He wanted me to write for his great medical charity. Perhaps I could have raised the price to 80 pounds.
Oh, please, for heaven's sake, stop making him in your image. Harry was real. He was not just your friend and my lover. He was Harry.
Don't preach to me. You talk about him as if he had occasional bad manners. Well, I don't know. I'm just a hack. Writer who drinks too much and falls in love with girls. You.
Me?
Don't be such a fool, of course.
Oh, if you had wronged me and asked me whether you were fair or dark or had a mustache, I would not have known.
I'm leaving Vienna. I don't care whether Harry was murdered by Kurtz or Popesco or the third man. Whoever killed him, there was some sort of justice. Maybe I would have killed him myself.
A person doesn't change because you find out more.
Look, I've got a splitting headache, and you just stand there and talk and talk and talk. I hate it.
Oh, you hate it.
You know, that's the first time I ever heard you laugh. Do it again.
There is not enough for two laughs.
If I make comic faces? If I stand on my head? Wouldn't stand a chance, would I? Oh, now, first you laugh and now this.
Go away. Just go away.
It was dark in the street, deserted. The large, empty square with the black buildings looming up around it. Not a sound. Just the mewing of a cat. Kitty? Kitty, kitty? Kitty? Suddenly I saw the cat was licking a pair of black shoes. Who's there? What kind of a spy do you think you are, waiting in a doorway to tail me? Well, cat, got your tongue? Come out of there. Come on, out. Harry. Harry!
And this is where you think you saw him.
This is where you saw Harry lie.
This is where he vanished. I told you he came out of that doorway. Don't you believe me?
You heard footsteps, you saw a shadow, and then you saw Harry lie.
I tell you,
Oh, yes, yes, of course. And then he vanished with a puff of smoke and a clap of thunder.
What's that over there? That booth in the square?
It's a kiosk. Inside are steps leading down to the sewer tunnel.
Tunnel? You mean a man could...
All right, Martins. Yes, a man could go down there, but I don't believe he did, and I don't believe it was lying.
Then why did you even bother to come out here?
You realize what this means? What you're forcing me to do? If you saw Lime tonight, then someone else was buried in that cemetery.
It was like a page out of Edgar Allan Poe. The gravediggers, the men holding torches, the open casket, and then an official of the cemetery turning to Calloway.
You knew this man, Major? You can identify him?
Yes. Yes, I knew this man. Joseph Harbin. Medical orderly at the General Hospital. Well, I suppose the least I can do is apologize, Martins. Obviously, you did see Harry Lyme.
Thanks.
I'll drop you off at the hotel and then
And if you don't mind, you can drop me off at Anna Schmidt's apartment.
You won't find her there.
Well, why not?
Because by now she's been arrested by Sergeant Payne.
Why, what for?
Her passport. It's wanted by the Russian police.
No.
She should be at my office by now.
Then I'd see her there.
No, Mr. Martins, you cannot see her there.
Now, if you just step in the office, Miss Schmidt. Major Calloway wants to speak to you.
I'm sorry to bring you back here at this hour, Miss Schmidt.
You are arresting me because of the passport. Is that it?
I'm not interested in your passport. When did you last see Harry Lyme?
2 weeks ago.
I want the truth. We know that Lyme is alive.
What did you say? I'm sorry.
I just come from the cemetery. Another man was buried in his place.
Where is he? Where is Harry?
That is what we want to find out.
I do not seem able to understand anything you say. He is alive now. This minute he's doing something.
We know he's somewhere in the Russian zone. In a few minutes, Captain Brodsky will be questioning you about your papers. Tell me where Lyme is.
I do not know.
If you help me, I'm prepared to help you.
Martin's always said you were a fool.
Huh? Vienna's a closed city, Miss Schmidt. Lyme can't get away.
I wish he were dead. He would be safe from all of you then.
Ah, you leave me no alternative. All right, Sergeant. Take her to Brodsky.
I called on Dr. Winkel early the next morning. I told him I wanted to talk to Harry Lyme.
Harry Lyme? Mr. Martins, are you mad?
All right, I'm mad. I've seen a ghost. You just tell Harry I want to see him today, this afternoon.
Be reasonable. How can you stand there and...
I saw Harry last night. Now, I passed a park a few blocks from here, an amusement park. You tell Harry I'll meet him there. You can arrange it, you or Kurtz.
You take a great deal for granted, Mr. Martins.
Do I? Or do ghosts only ride by night, Dr. Winkel? He was there at the amusement park at 3 o'clock. Harry Lyme, striding down the midway, a broad smile on his face, immaculate and chipper as always.
Holly, old man, how are you?
Hello, Harry.
Well, they seem to be giving you quite a busy time.
Now listen, I want to talk to you.
Of course. Come on, let's go on the Ferris wheel.
Ferris wheel?
Business must be bad. Look, not a soul to get in our way. We'll have it all to ourselves, our little talk. Or does it make you dizzy way up there?
Come on, we're wasting time.
What's wrong with this? Well, up we go, Holly. Kids used to ride this thing a lot in the old days, but they haven't the money anymore, poor devils. It's good to see you, old man.
Maybe it is, considering I was at your funeral.
It was pretty smart, wasn't it?
You know what happened to your girl?
Hmm?
She's been arrested.
Tough, eh? Nah, don't worry. They won't hurt her.
They're handing her over to the Russians.
What can I do, old man? I'm dead, aren't I? Holly, exactly who did you tell about me? Hmm?
I told the police.
Unwise, old man. Unwise.
And Anna.
And did the police believe you?
You don't care anything at all about Anna, do you?
Well, I've got quite a lot on my mind.
You wouldn't do anything for her.
What do you want me to do? Be reasonable. Do you expect me to give myself up?
Why not?
Holly, you and I aren't heroes. The world doesn't make any heroes outside of your stories. I've got to be so careful. I'm safe only here in the Russian zone. And I'm safe here only as long as they can use me.
As long as they can use you. So that's how they found out about Anna. You told them, didn't you?
Don't try to be a policeman, old man.
What do you expect me to be, part of
part?
Your...
You can have any part you want as long as you don't interfere. I've never cut you out of anything.
Yes, I remember the time they raided that gambling joint. You knew a safe way out.
Sure.
Yeah. Safe for you. Not safe for me.
Old man, you should never have gone to the police, you know. You ought to leave this thing alone.
Have you ever seen one of your victims?
Victims? Look down there, Holly. Way down there. Would you really feel any pity if one of those dots of humanity stopped moving forever? If I offered you £20,000 for every dot that stopped, would you really, old man, tell me to keep my money? Or would you calculate how many dots you could afford to spare, free of income tax?
A lot of good your money will do you in jail.
You forget. That jail's in the other zone. There's no proof against me, besides you.
I should be pretty easy to get rid of.
Pretty easy?
I wouldn't be too sure.
I carry a gun. I don't think they'd look for a bullet wound after you hit the ground. No, not from this height.
They've dug up your coffin, Harry.
And found Harbin. Pity. Holly, what fools we are to talk this way. As though I'd do anything to you or you to me. You're just a little mixed up about things in general. Nobody thinks in terms of human beings. Governments don't. Why should we? They talk about the people and the proletariat. I talk about the suckers and the mugs. It's the same thing. They have their 5-year plan, so have I.
You used to believe in God.
I still believe in God, old man. I believe in God and mercy and all that, but I'm also convinced that the dead are happier dead. They don't miss much here, now do they? Well, it appears our little journey into the ozone is over. Now, where are you going?
I'm not sure.
Then wait a minute. I'd like to cut you in, Holly. Nobody left in Vienna I can really trust, and we've done so many things together. When you make up your mind, send me a message through Kurtz. I'll meet you any place, any time. But it'll be you I want to see, old man, not the police. Remember that, eh? And don't be so gloomy. After all, it's not that awful. Remember what the fella said? In Italy, for 30 years under the Borgias, they had warfare, terror, murder, and bloodshed. But they produced Michelangelo, Leonardo da Vinci, and the Renaissance. In Switzerland, they had brotherly love. They had 500 years of democracy and peace. And what did they produce? The cuckoo clock. So long, Holly.
And that's part 3 of The Third Man, starring Joseph Cotten on the Lux Radio Theater. More after these words.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Thanks, Roger Badish. All right, 12:34 here on a Sunday morning. Happy Sunday to you, Lisa.
Happy Sunday, Carl.
And we are listening to an hour-long Lux Radio Theater presentation of The Third Man, starring the original star of the film, Joseph Cotten. Here's the concluding portion now of the Lux Radio Theater.
Here, Martin, in the international zone. Why not a cafe, a restaurant, anywhere?
You expect too much, Calloway. I know he deserves to hang, but don't ask me to tie the rope.
Okay, Martins. Forget it.
Pardon me, Major. Are you busy?
Oh. Yes, come in, Captain Brodsky.
We have identified the girl called Anna Schmidt.
Oh, yes. Well, I've questioned her, Captain. We have nothing against her.
But we have. We shall apply for her tomorrow at the Fort Power meeting. She has no right to be here.
I've made an application, too. I've asked your people to help me with Harry Lyme.
That is a different case, Major. It is being looked into. Good afternoon.
That's the sort of thing we're up against, Martins.
What price would you pay for Harry Lyme?
A considerable price.
Anna Schmidt's freedom?
Yes, Mr. Martins. I think even that might be arranged.
That's your train over there, miss. If there's anything else I can do...
I do not understand, Major Calloway, Sergeant. Why has he done this, helping me to run away?
I expect he's got a soft spot for you, miss. You're well out of things now. Good luck, miss.
Thank you.
Two minutes before the train leaves, Anna.
Oh, what are you doing here?
Oh, I just wanted to see you off. Well?
How did you know I'd be here? You have seen Major Calloway again.
Of course not. Now, Anna, send me a wire as soon as you arrive.
Where is Harry?
He's safe in the Russian zone. I saw him this afternoon.
How is he?
Oh, he can look after himself. Don't you worry.
Did he say anything about me? Tell me.
All the usual things.
No, something is wrong. Did you tell Calloway about meeting him?
Of course I didn't tell Calloway.
Then why should he help me like this? The Russians will only make trouble for him.
Oh, that's his headache.
Why are you lying to me?
We're getting you out of here, aren't we?
No, I will not go. You have seen Calloway. What are you two doing?
Well, they asked me to help take him, and I'm helping.
Poor Harry.
Poor Harry. Poor Harry wouldn't even lift his finger to help you.
You have your precious honesty. You want nothing else, do you?
You still want him?
No, I do not want him. I do not want to see him or hear him. But he's still a part of me, and to harm him, to... No. No, I cannot do it.
Get on the train.
No.
Why do we always have to quarrel?
If you want to sell your services, it does not mean I am willing to be the price. I loved him. You loved him. What good have we done him? Love. Look at yourself. They have a name for faces like that.
Anna didn't leave. I asked Calloway to get me on the first plane out of Vienna. This time he said I'd need a priority. He told me to come with him. He had another call to make first.
You know what this place is, don't you?
Hospital.
Yeah. I really didn't have to come here. I just thought it might interest you. You open that door, Mr. Martins. This is a ward. All the children you see in there are the result of Lyme's penicillin racket. Most of them have meningitis. Terrible pity, isn't it? Children. There are 40 of them in this one ward. No, I'm wrong. 38. Two of them died last night. Well, we're going to be on our way. Your priority. You'll be going straight to New York, I suppose. Well, let's see. With any sort of connections, you should
all
be
there. All right, Calloway. You win.
Win? Win what?
I'll stay. I'll be your dumb decoy duck.
Thanks, Martins.
The plan was very simple. Through Kurtz, I got word to Harry that I wanted to see him. Calloway picked the spot, the Cafe Orel, at 6:00. At 6:05, I sat down at a table in the corner, my eyes glued on the entrance for Lyme. I didn't even see her walk up.
He will not come, not Harry.
Anna. How did you know I...
Kurtz told you.
Kurtz, but...
now Kurtz has been arrested. The others, too.
I know. Major Galloway stopped me up there on the street. Harry will not come. He is not a fool.
He'll come.
What is your price this time?
Oh, no price, Anna. Please go away.
Honest, sensible, harmless Holly Martins. Holly, what a silly name. You must feel very proud to be a police informer, to be able to...
She stopped talking. She just stood there, across the cafe in the doorway. Was Harry Lyme.
Harry, get away! The police are waiting for you! Run! Run!
Suddenly there was a gun in his hand. Sergeant Payne was in front of him now. Harry fired once, but he never stopped moving. He ran through the cafe into the kitchen and he's gone. I was out in the street now. From all sides, the police were closing in. One group was running toward a kiosk, one of those little buildings covering the entrance to the sewer. Among them was Calloway.
Drei Minuten in den Donaukanal verkrochen!
Hey, bleiben! Oder schieße! Nicht! Nicht!
Martins, go back! Don't be a fool!
I've got a gun! I've got Sergeant Payne's gun!
Put it away and get out of here!
Where can he get to?
The Russian zone. He'll never make it. We've got men closing in from both directions.
They'll kill him.
That is up to Mr. Lyme. Wait at my office if you like. Just get out of here!
I went back to the street. There was a taxi on the corner and I gave Anna's address. But it was the sewer I was thinking of. The sewer and the kiosk in the square across Mana's house. I climbed down the iron ladder and waited. Far off, I could hear the shouts of the police, and below, as I clung to the wet wall, the sluggish churning of the water. And then a different sound. Someone was coming closer. Closer. Stay where you are, Harry.
Holly?
Yes.
My friend. My good friend, Holly.
You're through, Harry. You haven't got a chance.
I won't miss a second time, and you're in my way.
Harry, give up. Give up before they...
Suckers and mugs. All of you. Suckers and...
This was where I came in, the cemetery, the freshly dug grave, the priest reciting the credo, the grave diggers in the background, Calloway, and Anna.
Amen. In the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. Amen.
Now it was over. The girl turned and started down the long road between the trees.
What time is it, Martins?
Hmm? Oh, 2:30.
Get in the jeep. I'll have to step on it if we're going to catch that plane.
Calloway, can't you do something about Anna?
I'll do what I can. If she'll let me.
She's alone. She's so alone.
Well, perhaps I'll be able...
Now, wait a minute. Let me out.
Well, how much time, you know?
I can't just leave, please.
Oh, be sensible, Martins.
I haven't got a sensible name, Calloway. We had passed her. I stood at the edge of the road and waited. What could I say to her? What could I tell her? There wasn't time to think. She was in front of me now. Anna. But Anna Schmidt did not turn her head, not even a glance. She just kept walking down the road.
Now, here's Mr. Keeley with our stars.
We say goodbye to the third man, but welcome our stars for another curtain call. Joseph Cotton,
and Evelyn Keane.
Well, there's no doubt that our play tonight has one of the most famous musical themes we've ever heard.
Famous like your Lux Radio Theater theme music here, Bill. Whenever I hear it, I naturally think of Lux in Hollywood.
I think of Lux soap and its wonderful complexion care. There's a theme I can't praise enough.
Well, thanks, Evelyn. But when we look at you, we can understand why. But now, how about your musical preference in theme songs?
It's decidedly on the Latin side, definitely down South America way.
Could this be the influence of your trip down to South America for the film festival?
Yes, and we had a wonderful time. It was held at a beautiful summer resort on the coast called Punta del Este. And every night we saw motion pictures representing every country in the world, and the award was finally won by Italy.
You know, I think our audience would be interested to know that this was the first World Film Festival ever held in this hemisphere, and that you were invited as the guest of the Uruguayan government.
Yes, and they simply couldn't do enough for us all the time we were there. And then Joan Fontaine and I went on to Rio de Janeiro.
Joan Fontaine? Well, she's been in quite a bit of traveling lately, hasn't
Such
she?
As in the Paramount picture you both made for producer Hal Wallace, Joe?
Oh, that's right, September Fair. We actually made the picture in Italy. Now, that's a beautiful country to visit, Evelyn.
Oh, no need to. I saw your picture, and I don't know when I've been so impressed with an authentic background.
Well, there's nothing like travel. So where are you taking your radio audience next week, Bill?
We're going back to the early 1900s, Joe, and revive some of the most captivating music of our times. It's 20th Century Fox's gay musical, Oh, You Beautiful Doll. And for the first time, the producer of the picture will be one of its stars, the inimitable Georgie Jessel. And as his co-stars, Joan Caulfield and Bob Crosby.
Oh, we'll certainly be listening. Good night.
Good night, Bill.
Good night. You are both splendid.
Who is this Hollywood star?
At 15, she left a private school in Vienna to act in films. This photogenic dark-haired beauty came to America in 1937 and was starred in her first American picture.
A Viennese American beauty?
Mm-hmm.
That sounds like Hedy Lamarr.
Right. And Hedy is typical of Hollywood in her enthusiasm for new Lux with color freshener. Like so many Hollywood stars, she thinks the new Lux is more wonderful than ever. Insists on it for all her lovely worshipables. New Lux with color freshener keeps white things dazzling white. Prints sparkling, all colors gay as new every time you wash them. It's a real beauty bath for colors, and so safe. Take Hedy Lamarr's tip. Get new Lux with color freshener tomorrow. Give all your nice things that lovely Lux look.
Lever Brothers Company, the makers of Lux Toilet Soap, join me in inviting you to be with us again next Monday evening, when the Lux Radio Theater presents Oh, You Beautiful Doll, starring George Jessel, Joan Caulfield, and Bob Crosby. This is William Keeley saying good night to you from Hollywood.
Heard in our cast tonight were Ben Wright as Major Calloway, Edgar Barrier as Baron Kurtz, Ted DeCorsia as Harry, and Fritz Feld, Harold Dyron IV, Bill Johnstone, Herbert Butterfield, Jack Crucian, Robert Boone, Norman Field, Jeffrey Silver, Gladys Holland, and Eddie Marr. Our play was adapted by S.H. Barnett, and our music was directed by Rudy Schrager. This is your announcer, John Milton Kennedy, reminding you to join us again next Monday night to hear George Jessel, Joan Caulfield, and Bob Crosby in Oh, You Beautiful Doll. Stay tuned for My Friend Irma, which follows over these same stations. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
There you have it, an hour-long presentation on the Lux Radio Theater with the Third Man from April 9, 1951. Joseph Cotten reprising his role from the film noir. It was really a great film. If you've never seen The Third Man, you should see it. Orson Welles plays Harry Lime in it. And in fact, we will hear Orson Welles as Harry Lime in The Lives of Harry Lime in our next hour, a good radio broadcast from 1951, same year as this Lux Radio Theater, just a few months later. But also in that cast, just some amazing, amazing supporting players. Ben Wright, you had William Johnstone, who for a while played The Shadow on radio, Herb Butterfield, Jack Crucian, and Edward Marr. Tons of great stars in this show, as heard on CBS, sponsored by Lux. Lux Toilet Soap, they called it. They called it Lux Toilet Soap back then.
Do you have Lux Toilet Soap?
I don't think Lux is around anymore.
Well,
is
back
it?
When you were younger, did you?
Back in the 1940s?
Exactly.
Yeah, definitely I had it. All right, well, hope you enjoyed the Lux Radio Theater. More of the WGN Radio Theater after these words. There's still time. We have not had 50 people, but we've had a lot of people signing up to the Classic Radio Club. Now, we have a special offer for 50 people that are listening to the program right now. You can join the Classic Radio Club at classicradioclub.com for only $1 the first month. Now, what that means is you get 10 classic radio shows digitally emailed to your email address, along with liner notes about those 10 shows for only $1 for the first month. But you have to put the code radio at checkout. Now, if you want the CDs, which are 5 CDs with 10 classic radio shows, that's still only $1 the first month, but you do have to pay $4.99 shipping and handling. We have to ship it to you. So just go to classicradioclub.com, and as Lisa said, you can cancel at any time, right?
Yeah, it's a great way to build your collection, especially if you get the CDs. It comes in a collector's case and liner notes. And if you love classic radio, you can build your own CD, a set of CDs. Or, you know, if you prefer to get an email, there'll be a link in the email. It's really easy to work. You can try that too. But give it a shot. We think that you'll love it. That's why we put it together. You've listened to WGN Radio Theater. You must love classic radio. Or you love Lisa and Carl, or all of the above. So in any case, we'd love you to check it out, classicradioclub.com, and the promo code is radio.
Yeah, Ashley's mom is one of our Classic Radio Club members, right, Ashley?
She is, and she loves it.
I know. I send her, sometimes when I see it going out, I go, oh, wait, that's Ashley's mom, and I'll throw a little note or something like that.
Well, speaking of Ashley's mom, we're still waiting for Ashley's mom to come visit us.
Yeah, when is she coming over here?
I tell her every time to join me, and she always goes, I'm in my pajamas.
I'm probably
at like 8.
If Carl weren't here, I'm pretty sure she would come, though, right? So next time Carl is taking a night off, I'll let you know, and we'll have her come in.
Girls' night.
Yep.
I think Ashley's mom would like to, I'd like to meet her, so maybe she'd like to meet me.
Why is that reminding me of that song?
I tell her a few jokes.
Whose song is that? Whose mom is it?
Casey's mom.
Casey's mom's got it going on.
Yeah, that's my mom.
That's your mom.
Exactly. I want to meet her.
Ashley's
bring her
mom
in here.
Has got it going on.
She would love all the jokes that Carl said.
He's
got like 6
behind
jokes.
Behind the scenes, that's I true. Tell the everybody jokes around here. Sometimes they're not fit for broadcast, though. I
got that right.
I would say never
those,
fit
right?
for broadcast.
No, they're fit for, a lot of them are fit for broadcast.
Well, the one you told me today, my only reaction was,
that one's
you
not,
ought to tell Roger.
Okay, that one is not fit for broadcast.
Yeah, no, it's not.
But you know, hey, I'm not always broadcasting.
Well, we do have a lot of fun here behind the scenes. We've got pizza and...
We ordered some pizza.
And Hannah, who's up next, Stanley, she brought some donuts, and we're having
donuts.
A lot of fun. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, they're those big fancy ones, too.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's one in here with your name on it.
Hey, you know what, Roger?
Literally.
It's
what?
The broken one.
Yeah.
Do you know what's in the... hey, Roger?
Yes, Carl.
Do you know what's in the middle of a shebang donut? Huh? Do you know what's in the middle of a shebang donut?
I'm laughing already because I know it's going to be... Okay.
The whole shebang.
Okay. Oh, God.
Now, that one was fit for broadcast.
I don't think that was fit for anything. Is that even a joke?
I think next week, I think Dan Jaffe will be here to give away another year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter. Cat's Pride is our main sponsor here on the WGN Radio Theater. And folks, if you want a chance to win a year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter, you have to get your photo
in. What a prize. I wish I could enter. I seriously think I would send an entry in every day. I don't think I can enter. I don't think he'd appreciate that. But
and
if I could, I would.
Lisa Whoa.
That would not work out well.
No.
But send it in to catspridephoto@gmail.com. Make sure to include your name, your cat's name, your city, and your state. And next Sunday, you could be a big winner.
Yeah, if you want to know what you send in a picture of your kitty cat.
I just said that.
No, you didn't say that.
I thought
I did. We can roll back the tape. She didn't say
There's no tape, but okay.
Yeah, send a picture of your kitty cat to catspridephoto@gmail.com. Right?
All right.
And you'll be potentially a lucky winner of a year's supply. I don't have a cat, but if I had a cat...
then you'd want it.
I'd want to win that.
So I was going to mention, I was talking to Carl, what was it, about a week ago?
Yeah.
And I was telling you that I started watching a new series on Netflix because I'm always looking for the next best thing. And actually, my kids were watching it and they told me I had to see it. So I told you about it. And it's called The Fall. And who's in The Fall? Gillian Anderson
and from X-Files. Jamie Dornan.
And Jamie Dornan from
50 Shades of Grey.
50 Shades of Grey, the whole series. He's not hard on the eyes either. And this is...
was just a little taller and had a
you'd
beard.
You look exactly
look
like
identical
him.
Identical to him.
So there are three seasons. There's six episodes each season. I am on season 3, episode 4 of 6.
I'm done.
Carl binged the whole thing.
I'm done.
And I won't let him talk to me about it. But guys, if you're looking for
all
a new series, and I don't get paid by Netflix, but if I did, I would appreciate that.
It was great.
It's a great series. Check it out if you get Netflix.
I mean, it's definitely not for everyone, though. I mean, it's really
a psychological thriller.
Intimidating,
right? I would call it that.
Yeah, and it's very R-rated, though.
I mean, yes, it is.
You know, just a little warning.
I'm on the edge of my seat. I've got to finish this up, so I just thought I'd share with you.
Yeah, I just finished it.
I finished
it today.
Yeah,
I sent Lisa a text about she was sleeping. Of course,
I sent her
about 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Sent her a text. I just finished watching, The Fall, and call me when you wake up. And then around 3 o'clock, when she woke up, she gave me a call.
Well, that's just because I pretended I didn't see the text, so I didn't have to call you right away.
That's how she does it. All right.
See Carl, I'm like, eh.
In our next hour, we're going to tune in to The Lives of Harry Lime with Orson Welles from 1951. I think you will like it very much. That was a series that was recorded in London, originally aired on the BBC, and then it also aired on American radio. And Orson Welles at the time was living in London when the radio producer Frederick Ziv approached him and said, hey, let's do some radio together. And they did. They did two series. One was The Black Museum. We've played those before. Mm-hmm. And this series, The Lives of Harry Lime, that's coming your way after the news. Here are the sounds that matter. The top 5 at 5 from the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantes, weekday afternoons on 720 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. It is exactly 1 o'clock in the morning. Time for the news. Here's Roger Battish.
Heaven, I'm in heaven.
I know the words of this song.
And my heart beats so that I can hardly speak.
Your headphones aren't working? Turn it up. Lisa's headphones aren't working all of a sudden. Are they working now? Oh, well. Your mic's working, Lisa.
Okay.
All right. Dancing cheek to cheek. All right. So anyway, in this hour, Lisa Wolf, we are going to play The Lives of Harry Lime with Orson Welles in a show called Too Many Crooks. That's coming your way in this hour. First, though, we're going to play our game. Is it real or is it ridiculous? Sponsored by Cat's Pride. And who is the celebrity?
Brad Pitt. Now, I'm sure you've heard of that one, Ashley.
You know.
Yes. We're fans
Ashley,
of Brad Pitt.
Did you
Pitt?
Know that he is one of, I think, four brothers in there? He has a brother named Arm Pitt, Harry Pitt, and I think Smelly Pitt. Yeah.
That's Carl's joke number 7. So we've added one to the routine here.
All right. And
all right.
So what do they win?
We are going to give away a Twilight Zone 4 CD set.
Ooh,
coming
Twilight
your way,
Zone.
Hosted by Stacey Keach. So great stuff.
Okay. So call us now, 312-981-7200. What caller would you like?
Caller 4, please.
Call now, 312-981-7200. Win a Twilight Zone 4 CD set right after these words.
Come on, baby. Let's get ridiculous.
All right, let's get ridiculous.
All right, we've got John on the phone. Hey, how are you?
Hey, good. How are you?
Good. Glad you made it through.
Hi, John.
Hey, happy to talk to you.
The same here.
Best couple on radio.
Oh,
well,
thanks.
We definitely are not a couple.
Yeah,
but
she wishes we were.
Are you a couple of something?
Yeah, we're a couple,
couple of
something.
Coconuts,
all right.
That's what we are. Good to
all
talk
right.
to you, John.
Thank you. We're going to play a little Real or Ridiculous, Cat's Pride, and the celebrity is Brad Pitt. Ashley, you're okay to join us?
I am.
All right, here we go. John, Brad Pitt worked as an extra in the 1987 film The Lost Boys. Is that real or ridiculous?
That sounds like it could be real.
All right.
It's real.
I'm going to go with real.
I'm sorry, but I made
what?
That up out
oh,
of the nothingness.
Man.
So it
really?
Sounded good, but so sorry.
She got
that
all
sounded
three of us.
So.
Didn't it? I think it was all in the delivery.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Okay, let's try this one, John. He played Ross's childhood friend who hated Rachel on Friends, on the sitcom Friends. Was he on there?
I think he did.
I don't.
Yeah. I'm saying yes.
I don't think so.
Real.
I'm going to say ridiculous.
I'm with John. It's real.
It is real.
What?
He was Ross's childhood
he
friend.
He was?
He was.
All right. This is for you guys. And this is for me.
So, Carl, you're 0-2
I'm,
here.
I'm doing. I was
all
doing
right.
so good, too, before.
You were doing well, but
very
you were
well.
So close. Okay. All right, John, here we go. He was the first man ever to be named Sexiest Man Alive twice by People magazine. Is that real or ridiculous?
Well, I was once, and I think I was before him.
We must have been
that
before
was,
him.
That's a hard one. I'm going to say ridiculous, though.
Carl? Well, probably ridiculous because Carl was.
I was before him, I think.
So
I got it three times, though. Does that count?
It does count.
I'm sure he was at least once, but
yeah.
twice, I don't know.
I'm going to say ridiculous. What do you think, Ashley?
I'll go with ridiculous.
It's real.
What?
Guys. It's absolutely true. I
I stink.
Why
all of a
I get
at
pleasure
this
out of stumping you, I do
Gosh.
Not know.
Fine.
But the, I do. And the good news, John, is you are the winner, and you have won a Twilight Zone 4 CD set. Those Twilight Zones, those New Time Radio dramas, are fantastic. I have them. I listen to them, especially the ones that I'm in. Those are the best ones for sure. So if I'm in it, it's great. If I'm not, it's pretty good. But they are hosted by Stacey Keach. They are a lot of fun. I hope you enjoy them.
I will enjoy it. Thank you.
Take care, John.
John.
It was nice talking to you.
Take care, John. All right, he is a big winner. Going to win some Twilight Zone radio dramas. And right now it is time for the luck. Oh, no, wait, we've listened.
We
played the Lux.
One already.
Right now it's time for the lives of Harry Lime.
They
now,
both start with L.
Yeah.
It's the same thing.
Well, Orson Welles starred in the series. It was about his adventures as the character from The Third Man, Harry Lime. Now, as we know, Harry Lime dies in the film The Third Man. So this is a prequel to the movie. These are his adventures. He's kind of a scoundrel, this guy. He was a ne'er-do-well. And Orson Welles played him to perfection, not only in the movie The Third Man, but on this radio series. Very popular series. And this is a broadcast from August 3rd, 1951. It's called Too Many Crooks. Here's part one now of The Lives of Harry Lime.
Presenting Orson Welles as The Third Man. The Lives of Harry Lime. The fabulous stories of the immortal character, originally created in the motion picture The Third Man, with zither music by Anton Karas.
That was the shot that killed Harry Lime. He died in a sewer beneath Vienna, as those of you know who saw the movie The Third Man. Yes, that was the end of Harry Lime. But it was not the beginning. Harry Lime had many lives, and I can recount all of them. How do I know? It's very simple. Because my name is Harry Lime. don't get me wrong, I love Budapest. From Budapest come goulashes and shardashes. Shardashes being something you dance and goulash being something you eat if you go for all that paprika. Me, I love it. So, when I got that telegram, I took the first train to Hungary. Maybe I'd better tell you about the telegram first. Dear Mr. Lime, it said, my bank is going to be robbed and I need your help. It was signed Fekete, evidently a man's name, nobody I knew. I knew all about bank robberies, however, and I was dying to help. Besides, as I say, I love paprika. So I started packing right away. Before calling at the bank, I stopped at a cute little flower shop I happened to notice across the way. Good morning. Would you give me something for my buttonhole?
Why, Lily.
Lily, what are you doing here?
We have some very pretty pink gardenias.
Oh, come on, Lily, don't tell me you don't remember me. And how are all the Corellis?
The who?
Don't give me that, Lily.
My name is Lulu.
Well, it used to be Lily, and you used to be a blonde. And the Corellis, as you know perfectly well, because you used to work for them, are the best bank robbers in Central Europe. Well, what about it, honey?
Here are your gardenias, Harry. Now get out of here.
Okay, honey, okay. No need to get in a hassle.
I'm telling you, Harry, get out.
I never was one to argue, so I took my gardenia across the street and wore it into the bank.
Mr. Fekete will see Mr. Harry Lime.
You can go in now, Mr. Lime.
Oh, thank you.
Mr. Fekete will see you.
Yes, that's what I gathered.
This way, please. And
thank you.
Oh, Mr. Lime, yes. Will you please extinguish your cigarette? Mr. Fekete does not approve of smoking.
Thanks. I'll bear that in mind.
Mr. Lime.
Come in. Come in and shut the door. There's a drape.
Do you mind if I sit down, Mr. Fekete, or is there a rule against that?
Sit down, sit down. You're a very impertinent young man, but I don't mind that. I'm an impertinent old man. We ought to get along together very nicely.
What's your proposition, Mr. Fekete?
Yeah. What do you mean?
Just what I said. What's your proposition?
Listen to me, Lime. I don't make propositions. I consider them.
Have it your own way, Fekete. And I'm a big boy now, and I'm not so easily impressed.
What do you mean, impressed?
All this big desk, double secretary, Mr. Fekete will see you now. Mr. Fekete doesn't approve of smoking, busy executive hoopla. I may go down very well with the bumpkins who give you their money to invest. It doesn't mean a thing to me. You sent for me, didn't you? I crossed 3 national borders to get here and lost a lot of time, so don't ask me what's my proposition. What's yours, Mr. Fekete?
very good indeed. You're just the man I hoped you were. Have a cigar.
Wouldn't that be breaking the rules?
I make the rules, Mr. Lime, and I don't like cheap tobacco smoke. Nor do I enjoy being forced to distribute these very costly custom-made Havanas to every, what is it you call them, bumpkin, who comes into my office. I think you'll enjoy these.
Thanks.
Light?
Thanks.
Good. Now that we're a little more at ease, suppose you tell me something about yourself.
Why?
What do you mean, why?
I wish you'd stop asking me what I mean by everything I say, Fekete. I said why, and I meant why. You put private detectives on my trail, you found me, you made me a very substantial down payment on services to be rendered, and now, when I get here, you want me to tell you about myself. That's just plain silly, old man. It's obvious that if you went to all that trouble and expense to get me here, you knew about me already. I'm the one to ask the questions, not you.
Better and better. Mr. Lime, if you were just a little less notorious as a crook, I'd offer you a vice presidency in my bank.
I forgive the insult, Mr. Fekete.
What do you mean, insult?
There you go asking me what I mean again. I meant insult.
Now, don't you get pompous on me, Lime. You are a crook, a well-famous one. You don't want to deny that?
What I don't want is very simple, Mr. Fekete. I don't want to be a vice president of your bank.
Huh? Oh, I follow you now. Don't worry, Lime.
Right.
I promised you $20,000.
That's right.
It's equivalent in Hungarian pesos.
Oh, wait a minute.
And you'll get it without having to serve as an officer at this
you
bank.
You promised me $20,000, old man. There weren't any gimmicks in the agreement about the joke money you folks pass off on each other locally. I know. I carry my own microscope for reading the fine type.
Very well, very well. $20,000 it is. Don't you want to know what I expect you to do for
it? Mr. Fekete, you keep making me repeat myself. I told you before that I'm a big boy now. If you're giving me $20,000, I can relax, not worry about asking you silly questions. You're going to get around eventually to telling me what you expect me to do for it.
Did you ever hear of a bank giving a reward?
Yes, but only after a bank robbery.
Exactly. Exactly. Only after a bank has been robbed. I'm reversing the procedure, Lyle. I'm giving the reward first.
Oh, so that's the little caper, is it? You want me to rob your bank for you?
Well, not at all, not at all. A reward is usually given for apprehending the thieves who have robbed the bank. What I want you to do, Harry, I may call you Harry?
Certainly, old man, call me Harry if it gives you any fun.
Well, Harry, what I want you to do is to apprehend the robbers before the robbery is committed. Very clever, don't you think so? Have another cigar.
my business, I may get in the way of an awful lot of screwy deals, but I can tell you that never in a long career have I been offered in complete seriousness a loopier proposition than Mr. Feckety's. It seems the key to the whole affair was Mr. Feckety's junior officer in the bank, a certain Mr. Fodor.
Ladislaus Fodor is the full name, Harry. He's one of our vice presidents.
I see.
And I tell you this right now, the man is an unprincipled criminal.
Oh?
Come here and I'll show him to you. Come this way. You can see him through the glass panel.
There he is.
There he is.
Oh, that's one.
Second desk to the right. With all those silly hairs pasted over his bald head. That's the man.
He doesn't look very dangerous to me.
Fodor? Dangerous? He is the brain of a backward bird and the charm of a worm. Now that I look back on it, I can't imagine how I ever persuaded myself to be jealous.
Jealous? I don't follow you, old man.
If I have a fault, Harry, it is this. I do tend to be jealous. Lulu often chides me about it, and I have promised to curb the instinct, but there, it is a part of my
case. Lulu, you mean the girl in the flower shop across the way, that Lulu?
She is the only Lulu I know, Mr. Lyon. How does it happen that you are acquainted with her?
You see this carnation?
I see it, yes.
Lulu sold it to me, overcharged me, scandalously, as a matter of fact.
Well, Lulu is a working girl. She must live. How does it happen you know her?
What makes you think I do?
You know her name?
Oh, one of the other customers called her that while I was still in the shop. As it happens, it was this little fellow you just pointed out to me over there, the vice president, Fodor.
Third vice president.
I hate to keep harping on these commercial matters, Feckety, old man, but just how does my $20,000 reward come into the picture?
Let us retire to my inner office, Harry. I never tell you.
Okay,
come.
Old man.
Sit down, please, Harry. Have another cigar.
My pockets are bulging with cigars now, old man. Let's concentrate on the 20,000.
Certainly, right? Certainly. Oh, Miss Garber. Miss Garber.
Yes, Mr. Feckety?
No matter who calls, don't disturb me. Not on any account. I'm having an important conference.
Yes, Mr. Feckety.
Oh, jealousy, Harry. Jealousy is a terrible
yes,
thing.
Yes, yes, certainly is. Now about this reward.
Jealousy is the green-eyed monster who doth mock the meat it feeds on. That's how the poet Shakespeare expresses
it. Yeah, the poet Shakespeare said a mouthful, and now...
But still, if it had not been for jealousy, I would never have followed this Fodor into Lulu's shop. And if I hadn't done that, I would never have discovered the digging.
Digging? What digging?
What would you say, Harry, if I were to tell you that running under the street from Lulu's flower shop to this bank, there is a tunnel?
A tunnel?
What would you say if I told you that?
Well, I'd say, well, what do you know? That's what I'd say.
That's what I said when I found out about it. And that's why I say now that I mustn't ever forget to be grateful to jealousy, particularly since I've discovered that there's nothing between Lolo and Fodor. Nothing serious, that
and, is. And do you know what I'd say to that?
No.
A couple of rude words.
Yeah, but why?
Why? You find them scrabbling away together like a couple of chubby moles, digging away in the general direction of your bank vault, and you say there's nothing serious between them?
There isn't, I'm sure of that. I have Lulu's wife. And besides, what could she possibly see in a fat little nonentity like Fodor? No, the only one who thinks it's serious is Fodor. And that's the whole point. Fodor is a dupe, a mere cat's paw in the conspiracy.
Oh, yes, and who's the mastermind?
I am.
And what does Fodor think about that?
He languishes in ignorance. He knows nothing. And to think that he aspires, he dares to aspire to my position in the bank.
And how does Lulu fit in?
I must tell you that Lulu has given me some reason to hope that she will someday make me the happiest man in the world.
And how would she do that? By giving up Fodor or sending you a big bouquet of roses? Let's get down to cases, old man. Wedding bells can ring out from Buddha to Pest and back again, but I won't be there to throw any rice unless I get paid. What is it exactly you want from me? Lessons on how to help Fodor and Lulu rob your bank?
Fodor's going to do the robbing. And besides, it isn't my bank. I'm only a salaried
and
officer.
And then Fodor gives you the money to give to Lulu,
certainly
is that
not,
it?
Certainly not. That would be silly.
That's just what I was thinking.
No, every day Fodor is supposed to take the paper money from the various cages and place it in the vault.
Yeah.
This is his responsibility.
Yeah.
Tonight, however, he will not do this. He will leave the money outside the vault, hidden in a large filing cabinet.
Oh,
the entire plan has been carefully worked out, I can assure you.
All I can say is this Fodor of yours is a very cooperative type of cat's paw.
Don't call him this Fodor of yours. He isn't. He's no Fodor of mine.
Have it your own way, old man. What comes next? You, I suppose. Huh? You come a half hour later with a dark lantern and a gunny sack. You wrap up the money, join Lulu, who's been waiting for you across the street in the flower shop, and the two of you, hand in hand, move off down the road into the sunrise and also into the very choicest Hungarian huskow.
What is a huskow?
A jail or prison, a place of forcible incarceration, a lockup for bad little bank robbers.
Not at all, not at all. It is Fodor who goes to prison.
Oh, yes, and how do you work that?
That is one of the things I want you to arrange.
Oh, I see. I'm going to have to earn that 20,000. I think we'll start by having it deposited in my name and in somebody else's bank, old man.
Why now?
And why another bank?
Well, every bank in Budapest isn't going to be robbed tonight, so I think I'd prefer one of the others. And I'll take it now, because I know you wouldn't want me to go to the police with what is, after all, a fairly sordid little story.
Good, but that's blackmail.
Oh, watch your language, old man. Blackmail's a nasty word. You know, all I want is protection for my poor little 20,000. I'll give you service for it, too, but I want to be absolutely positive that you're ready to meet your payroll.
Very well. You'll have your money, but you will help me.
I'm going to need a few more solid facts, old man.
Well, it all began with this insane jealousy of mine for Ford.
Oh, yeah?
I took to following him. He used to go into Lulu's flower shop at night long after it was closed. And one time he left the shutter unfastened and I went in. There were no lights in the shop itself, but I could hear voices from the basement below. I opened the trapdoor very carefully so as not to be heard. And what do you think I saw?
You saw Lulu, Fodor, and three men all hard at work digging a tunnel.
Yeah. How did you know?
I didn't, I guess. After all, you told me there was a tunnel.
But the three men, how did you know about them?
Still guessing. It's pretty obvious that Mr. Fodor and Lulu couldn't dig much of a hole without getting some help. Tell me this. It was Lulu who persuaded you to call me in on this deal, wasn't it?
How did you know that?
Still just guessing, old man, just guessing. Now, let me guess on for a minute and stop me when I'm wrong. When you saw what Lulu and Fodor were doing, you went home and brooded for a while, and a few days afterwards, you confronted her.
It was the next day.
Okay, it was the next day. And Lulu admitted she was planning to rob the bank, but said she was just using Fodor, and you were the only one she really cared about. And if you joined the party, it's you she'd run off with, leaving Mr. Fodor holding the bag. An empty bag. How am I doing?
Oh, you're a clever man.
Sure I am. That's why Lulu had you sent for me.
You see, the idea is that Fodor will hide the money outside the vault and leave. Then, according to the arrangement as he understands it, Lulu will come through the tunnel at night with her helpers and take the money back under the street through the tunnel.
Who did she tell Fodor these helpers were?
She said one of them is her brother and the other two are cousins.
And what did she tell you?
That's what she told me. Why?
Nothing, old man. Nothing at all. Just give me one more guess,
Oh, go ahead.
After Fodor leaves the money, what you do is crawl back through the tunnel with a sack of currency clenched in your teeth. But no, that wouldn't make any sense, would it? You'd run into a couple of brothers crawling in the opposite direction.
I'm not to have anything to do with the tunnel.
Oh.
You see, Fodor leaves the money out just before closing time. That way, he's implicated, and we have a scapegoat. So there's nothing to stop me from letting myself in with my key at night and walking away with the money. Who could suspect me? It's a perfect crime, Harry. Wouldn't you say so?
Yes, it's quite a crime if you look at it in one way. But tell me about the brothers. What are they supposed to think about all this?
Oh, they don't know about it. Lulu hasn't told them.
But the news will reach them eventually, and what then?
They must be implicated somehow, along with Fodor. But I must be protected, and Lulu. That's what you're here for, Harry. Have another cigar.
All right, that's the first portion of The Lives of Harry Lime, Too Many Crooks, starring Orson Welles, going back to 1951. More after these words. All right, why don't you throw it to Roger for news, Lisa?
Don't throw it to me because you'll hit me.
Yeah. No, I'll throw it
just
gently,
toss it,
Roger.
Nice.
Yeah. I toss it lightly.
It is almost 1:30 on the dot, and here is the news with Roger Badish.
That was very good.
Not
you
bad,
should do it
Lisa.
All.
Yeah. I should.
Gosh.
You should do it every time.
I know.
I don't think so.
It's a big job. I don't know if I can take that from Carl.
Yeah.
He's very, you
He'll
know.
He'll feel very lonely.
No, very protective.
He's very, that's the word I was looking for.
Protective.
He's very protective of his job.
Yeah. Yes, he is.
So I won't take that
I can be
from
replaced
him.
Easily. I just don't want to be replaced that easily.
Well, she did.
You are very unique.
Well, that's one way of putting it.
It's 1:30 on the dot. Here's the news with Mr. Roger Badish.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
I ate one of those donuts.
Did
that
you?
Hanley brought in.
That who brought in?
Hannah brought in. It was amazing.
They are. There were these little tiny, mini tiny ones. That's like a little.
I had a whole
like,
one.
Like a little donut hole.
I had the whole thing. I had a whole donut, and it had a hole in it.
I ate the hole.
Did you? That has no calories. The hole
that
has no
sounds
calories at all.
Like I shouldn't be talking
Where
about
Where were those
radio?
From? It was so good.
Stan's Donuts.
Oh, Stan's
they are
donuts!
Amazing,
Stan. He knows how to make a donut.
Stan does a great job.
Hannah actually had that chocolate one that you were warned not to touch.
Yeah. I did not touch
she
it.
Said,
I got
touch
a
the
stern
chocolate.
Warning not to
we,
touch the chocolate
listen.
One.
Listen,
guess what was inside?
Chocolate.
No.
What?
Peanut butter and
oh.
banana.
Oh, then I
oh
wouldn't have eaten
gosh,
it anyways.
It sounds delicious. I would
if you say
that.
Peanut butter, I'm out of here.
Hannah
really?
And I
yeah.
should have,
oh.
we should have taken it, like, you know.
And banana.
And I would have been on one side and she would have been on the other and we just would have ate it and then.
That sounds a little intimate. I'm not sure Hannah wants to be that intimate.
Yeah,
I'm
sure she doesn't.
Hannah wants to be that intimate either.
But I'll be sure to ask her when she comes in here.
All right, we're listening to The Lives of Harry Lime with Orson Welles. Here is the conclusion.
Naturally, the first thing I did after making my farewells to Mr. Feckety was to go across the street and pay a call on Lulu.
Harry. Yeah. Listen to me carefully.
I'm listening, honey.
There's a little cafe on the hill above the old city. You know the place? Mm-hmm. There's a gold roost on the roof.
Well, what about it?
Go there and wait for me. You never can tell when Fodor or Feckety will be bursting in here. They keep jumping across the street to check up on each other and buying geraniums. Go to the cafe and I'll be with you as soon as I can close
up
here.
What about the boys below?
Well, what do you mean?
The construction crew, the Corellis.
Oh, Feckety told you about the Corellis?
I would have found out anyway, Lily.
Lulu.
Okay, what happens to them if you shut up the store? Isn't there a way out?
No, but they won't be finished work before I'm back. Besides, what they don't know won't hurt them.
Lily, or rather Lulu, it looks to me as though just about everybody around here is due to be hurt by what they don't know. I found the gold rooster and sat down on the terrace of the restaurant to wait for Mr. Feckety's fiancée. Over a glass of Tokay, I tried to add up the situation as of then. As far as I could see, the whole setup was like a Picasso painting. No matter how you looked at it, it was cockeyed and upside down.
Hello, Harry. Don't order anything for me. I haven't time.
Don't worry, Lily. I'm not here to celebrate. We can have our party after. I know who's going to pay the check.
I wish you'd call me Lulu.
Okay, Lulu. Now, here's all the sense I can make out of this little paper. You came here with a Corelli gang, right?
No, they came first. Oh. Then they sent for me to work in the flower shop for a front. The tunnel was their idea.
Then you sent for me. That was your
You're
idea.
You're right.
Hmm? Fodor thinks he's going to divvy up with the Corellis and marry you on the proceeds.
Something like that.
Feckety thinks something like the same something. The president thinks he's going to put it over the vice president. What about the construction crew?
You mean Walter and
yes,
the others?
The Corellis, the original burglars. What are they going to get out of this? According to Feckety, it's going to be the old double cross. But if I know you, Feckety's in for the same gentle treatment.
Harry, why should anybody get anything out of this except...
Okay, Lily, okay. Book a couple of spaces for us on the first milk train out of Budapest. But be sure to get reservations on the bulletproof car.
I wish you'd call me Lulu.
Time marches on. A lot of trusting Hungarian depositors line up at the bank, leave their hard-earned pengos at the impressive-looking gilt cages for what they fondly believe is safekeeping, and hurry home to have their evening plate of goulash. Closing time comes and goes. Feckety doesn't leave. He just pretends to, and stays skulking in his office. Meanwhile, Fodor takes the big packages of pengos, which, as you know, is Hungarian for money, dutifully to the door of the vault. He slams the vault loudly, this being for the benefit of the janitor, who is deaf anyway and doesn't hear, and quickly stows the loot in the empty filing cabinet, which he has thoughtfully left nearby for just this purpose. He then goes home and passes a very restless night. The moon rises over the city and winks at its own reflection in the Danube. A lot of good Hungarians are in their beds. The others are all in a nightclub called the Arizona, dancing the Shardash. They do not come into this story, so we'll leave them dancing. Down onto the street, the Corellis, those adept bank robbers, continue to dig. They are putting the finishing touches on their tunnel, and we will not listen in on them because their conversation is very vulgar indeed. In his luxurious office, Mr. Feckety sits biting his nails and dreaming of a long West Indian cruise with Lulu in an adjoining deck chair. As the gang in the tunnel understand it, when the clock strikes 12, they are to open the secret trap door which they have previously prepared inside the bank, a section of tiling near the vault, go to the filing cabinet and take out the money which Fodor has left there, thus eliminating the noise and inconvenience of breaking into the vault, and, first closing the loose tile after themselves, scuttle back with the loot under the street into the flower shop, out into the night and as far away from Hungary as possible. As I say, that's the way the gang in the tunnel understand it. This is also the arrangement as Mr. Fodor understands it, with a trifling difference, that he expects Lulu to stop by for him with his share of the profits. Like Mr. Feckety, he is biting his nails and dreaming of tropical cruises. And thought of Lulu. What of Lulu, indeed? It is Lulu's little plan to foozle everybody, Corelli, Fodor, and Fekete. She's led them all on to just this point. It is the point of departure. Lulu's departure. Lulu and all those neatly wrapped packages of Pengos. The trouble is, it's all just a little bit too much for one little girl to handle alone, so Harry Lime's been sent for. Harry is supposed to assist at the general foozling of one and all, and then, in due time, of course, he's to be foozled as well. Lulu will send Harry off to mail a postcard, and when he gets back, Lulu will have continued her travels alone, with nothing to keep her company but the loot. That, as I say, is the way Lulu understands it. The clock, high in the steeple of San Stefano, strikes 12. This is the signal. Mr. Corelli, that celebrated expert with his two able assistants, starts toward the bank. The tunnel was not built for comfort, and the going on hands and feet is a trifle rough. There's a bit of genteel cursing, but hearts are high. At the sound of the clock, Mr. Fekete removes the bound bundles of money from their place of safety and checks once again the bolts and fastenings which keep the loose tile in its place. In the darkness, Mr. Fekete smiles. He is satisfied that, contrary to the Corelli's expectations, the bank end of the tunnel is firmly and irrevocably closed. Still smiling, he starts toting the money toward the side door for which he, Mr. Fekete, is the perfectly legal possessor of a key. On the outside, Lulu, with a high-speed car, is supposed to be waiting for him. Unfortunately, however, a moment earlier, Harry Lime, on the flower shop end of the tunnel, has persuaded Lulu to go down for a moment and tell the boys not to try lifting that trick tile for at least a half hour. Lulu hates herself now for not having analyzed the merits of this suggestion. She has plenty of time now to think this over because foxy old Harry in the flower shop has bolted down the trap door. The clock has stopped striking, of course, and Mr. Fekete pops out of his bank looking for all the world like a jolly Christmas shopper with his arms loaded with bundles. There is a high-speed car waiting for Mr. Fekete, all right, but it is full of strange gentlemen, and they are all dressed in uniforms.
Put up your hands, Fekete. Put up your hands. You're under arrest.
But there's some mistake.
No, not at all, old man. No mistake at all. You see, gentlemen, just as you were told, there he is, and there's the money.
Come along now, Fekete. We are taking you in.
You, Harry, a police informant.
Not a bit of it, old man. I wouldn't dream of telling on you. No, the cop got the tip-off from an anonymous letter, and you know how you spell anonymous? L-U-L-U.
Lulu. She did it. Lulu.
Lulu, that wouldn't be Lulu Hearts, would it? Alias Lily the Twister.
Yes, officer, I believe so. There's a reward offered for her capture, isn't there?
I should say there is.
What about the Corelli gang?
They've got the biggest price on their heads in Central Europe.
Oh, that's lovely. It's all beginning to add up when you throw in the generous reward Mr. Fekete posted in the name of his bank this afternoon.
But you're not going to collect that, are you?
Why not, old man? After all, you put up the money for me to collect before the bank was robbed, didn't you? You also wanted me to thwart the Corellis, and if you yourself are foolish enough to go breaking the law, you'll just have to tell it to the judge.
I'll tell him plenty. I'll tell him about you.
Go ahead. I haven't broken any laws, remember, and you'll only help me collect my various rewards.
As a matter of fact, Lime, just what is your connection with this affair? What have you done?
Officer, all I did was turn a bolt on a trap door. Nothing at all, really, just a twist to the wrist. And now, if you've got some spare handcuffs ready, I think we'd better open it up again. The folks down below may be getting a little fretful, and I think they'll appreciate a change of scene. If you'll come with me, officer, I'll show you the place.
Really, Mr. Lime, I can't tell you how grateful...
Please, please, old man, don't mention it. Pleasure, I assure you. Won't you have a cigar? You know, friends, I had thought of substituting those fat packages of Pengos for the same weight of old newspapers. But the rate of exchange wasn't so good on the Pengo just then, so I resisted the temptation. After all, as Mother always said, too many crooks spoil the goulash.
All right, there it is. The Lives of Harry Lime. That is from August 3rd, 1951. Too Many Crooks. And that stars the great Orson Welles.
Is that like Too Many Cooks?
Yeah.
Same thing, cooks?
Yep.
They spoil the broth?
Yep. Orson Welles. He used to sign his letters, "Obediently Yours."
I like that signature.
"Obediently Yours." Remember he used to do those Palmasan wine commercials?
I do.
Remember
those? Palmasan will sell no wine.
Sell no wine.
Before it's time. He's just got a presence, that's for sure.
And he was the star of the War of the Worlds. You know, that was I did my college thesis on the War of the Worlds. You know, I was always a radio crazy about these radio shows.
Oh, I know.
And and that's when I met John Houseman. While I was in college.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm doing my thesis on the War of the Worlds, and here John Houseman is coming to my college to speak. Right,
I was a huge fan of his.
Paper Chase.
I love that show.
So here he is, right? John Houseman's coming to my college to speak, and it was like there wasn't a lot of people there, and I brought my DAT machine, and I thought, man, I'm going to try to get an interview with him, right? So. I listened to the whole speech, and as he's walking out, you know, with his sort of entourage of people, I said, "Mr. Houseman, excuse me, my name is Carl, and I am doing my thesis on the War of the Worlds." And he lit up. I mean, he was just like, he looked at me as like, you know, and he sat down and talked to me. We talked like, I would say 10, 15 minutes.
Do you still have that interview?
Yeah,
I have it.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd love to hear it with my DAT
machine, and he was so cool. And he told me so much inside stuff on the War of the Worlds and what really happened behind the scenes of that. Because John Houseman was the executive producer of the Mercury Theater on the Air. He was partners with Orson Welles back in the 1930s. And they were doing a lot of Broadway productions, you know, off-Broadway productions. They were doing, you know, Shakespeare and all these things. And Orson Welles, he really wasn't, at that time, that enamored with radio. He was a stage guy. He wanted to stage these productions of you know, off-Broadway. And so it took money to do that, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so he was like, well, I guess I'll do radio. I have this great voice. I'll do radio. And so he was the shadow on radio. He had the show The Mercury Theater on the Air. But when he did get The Mercury Theater on the Air, CBS, you know, gave him a pretty good budget and a good salary, and that's when he brought in his partner in the theater business, John Houseman.
Right.
Brought him in and said, "Hey, why don't you executive produce this show? We'll call it the Mercury Theater." That was their theater company. Agnes Moorehead was part of that. And all kinds of, you know, Everett Sloan and all these great actors, Kenny Delmar and these people. And so they did basically a radio version of what they were doing on the stage. But then they took classics of literature like, you know, A Tale of Two Cities and Count of Monte Cristo and, you know, in H.G. Wells' story, The War of the Worlds, and they dramatized it on his Mercury Theater. But it was so great to talk to John Houseman, right? Orson Welles' partner. And he told me, you know, when they were going to do The War of the Worlds, War of the Worlds broadcast, Orson Welles was like, "What is this?" They did a recording, and it was very boring. And he was like, "This is boring." He said, "We got to liven this thing up." So then he said, "Let's make it like it's a newscast. Let's make it like it's happening now."
And that's what changed everything right
there. Yeah, because the original story by H.G. Wells is just the story of Martians invading Earth. And then what happens is they take over Earth. But before they completely annihilate Earth, the germs that God in his infinite wisdom put on this Earth destroy the Martians. So that, you know, man and all the firepower they had with the army could not kill these beings
but
from
another
planet.
Changing it into a newscast is what changed everything.
Well, but that same story was still there, and how they eradicated the Martians was through germs. Okay, it wasn't anything that the military was able to do. So the full story by H.G. Wells was there.
Right.
But Orson Welles' genius of saying, "Hey, this is not going to go over well, you know, with the radio broadcast." And it's Halloween Eve. It was October 30th, 1938. And he said, "It's Halloween Eve. Let's Let's do something fun. Let's have it be like people are listening to a newscast.
Like newsy, yeah.
Yeah, and guess what? People believed. Not
sure
everybody,
did.
But a lot of people believed
that we were actually being invaded right.
by Martians.
I know,
the War of the Worlds. We've played it here. We'll play it again.
Yeah.
All right, let's take a quick break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater.
Do you love classic radio shows? Hi, this is Carl Amari. I'm the curator of the Classic Radio Club at ClassicRadioClub.com. I have over 100,000 classic radio shows, and now you can receive the best of the best from my collection each and every month. Join the Classic Radio Club at ClassicRadioClub.com and receive 10 shows on 5 CDs for only $4.99 plus shipping and handling. Then each month, I'll send you 10 more shows on 5 CDs for only $14.99 plus shipping and handling. Or you can choose the digital option and pay $4.99 the first month and only $9.99 each month thereafter and never pay shipping and handling. Each classic radio show will be superior sound quality and you'll never get a duplicate show. And if you're not completely satisfied, you can cancel at any time with no further obligation. Start receiving the greatest classic radio shows of all time for less than $10 a month if you choose the digital option. Log on to ClassicRadioClub.com.
All right, tomorrow. Well, actually, tonight, when we come back here, we have some more classic radio, right, Lisa?
We do. We have The Great Gildersleeve. I know that's your brother's
favorite.
That
was also a TV show.
It was.
Fred would know.
Not until after the radio show.
He would know that there's a radio
show. We haven't introduced him yet.
I know, we will.
And we have Escape, which is always a fan favorite.
That was not a television show.
No, that was not.
But
we will be back here tonight in about 21 hours.
Yep.
But before that, we have Hannah Stanley, and she's filling in for the great Dave Plyer, who filled in for Lou Manfredini this morning.
Yes.
But we're so glad you're here, not only because you brought us donuts.
We did. I actually didn't, but I had friends who knew I was on air who brought them for me.
Oh,
well,
nice.
It counts as your
posse.
We're going to count that as you brought them.
Yes.
And it's always great to see you and talk to you and do a little crosstalk on the air with you.
Thank you. And we have Fred Weintraub, who is sitting in with me this evening for many of the segments, and so that's exciting, from WCIU, and also the Worldly Fellow. He comes on and talks to me about all of my British fixations. So.
Well, Fred and I have known each other for years, so it's good to reconnect, Fred.
It is absolutely great to reconnect, and it's good to be able to look into Hannah's eyes, because usually I'm in London or Singapore, and it's very hard to do that.
I know, and I'm like, please tell him during the break that we want to talk about such and such. So it's actually a treat to have you. He's in Chicago, so he's here. Tons of great stuff coming up in the air. But I did want to tell you, the couple that brought the donuts to all of us, Steve Furkow is the husband of the couple. He's a double lung transplant recipient. He has cystic fibrosis, and so he had to have new lungs to live, and he got these lungs, and then he also, many people who have gone through organ transplant know that the meds, the anti-rejection meds, really wreak havoc on your body. He then needed a new kidney. I will tell you, his lung donor played volleyball in high school, and one of her teammates donated a kidney. So he's like,
that's
crazy. Oh, that's so
awesome. Did he get these donations from then people that he knew, or did he do it through like a gift of hope?
It was absolutely. And Carrie, who was his lung donor, passed away when she was in high school, but had told her family twice in the previous months leading up to her untimely passing that she wanted to be a donor.
Yeah.
And so now he knows them and has a team for Hustle, which is now called, because it can't be called Hustle Up the Hancock anymore. So it's called Carrie's Climbers. So if anybody's interested in donating to them, and I'll be doing Hustle coming up on February 25th.
Too. Wow, that's
interesting.
Great.
Yeah, but they brought us the donuts. So thank you, Steve.
What a nice story. I just, as a side, I always sign the back of my driver's license for organ donation.
It's so easy.
And the thing is, I didn't used to do it. And the reason that I did do it ultimately was because I started doing some work at the Gift of Hope, and I do work for them regularly. So I know a whole lot about organ donation and how that takes place and the process by which it takes place. And it's really the ultimate gift. That's all
I can say. Absolutely. It really, really is. And the state of Illinois, they changed the registration system probably about 5 or 10 years ago. So if you registered a long time ago, please do it again. But you can sign the back of your license. And when you go and get renewed, they just ask you the question. All you have to do is say yes.
Yeah.
It's easy. So thank you to Steve and Laura for the donuts for everybody.
Oh, they're delicious.
Weren't they?
Oh, my gosh.
They're huge.
So good.
Except for you. You and I, because I had to try them to make sure, because I'm a mom, I needed to make sure they were okay for everybody. So I tried a little one. They were okay. So then I let you eat one.
Right.
And then I tried it.
Fred, I wouldn't want to be the first
Fred?
One.
I didn't. But now, can I assume that there's going to be spectacular food every time I walk into
the studio? Yes. And we'll have a spectacular time. And you are always invited to come visit us at WGN.
Anytime you want to come on the air and chat with us. And Fred, I know you have a history with MeTV and with Neil and all that. And I'm sure you're a fan of the classic television shows. And certainly you like the radio shows, too. So you're invited. And, of course, Hannah, you're invited at all times. Talk about these great classic radio shows and
stuff. I love it. I used to listen to a long time ago. That's all I'll say.
Back when they were first airing.
So,
right?
So we're going to be driving. We carpool, Lisa and I. So we're going to be driving. We're going to be listening. So what do we have? What are some of the topics that we talk about?
I can't have Fred studio without talking about the accident that Prince Philip had this week, because that's kind of a big deal, but leads us to a bigger topic about when people should maybe stop driving.
So, about what age you mean?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Or what,
Lisa?
What level of abilities and how we want to measure that.
Well, that's the thing. Different people are different places at different ages. It's not that simple.
We can't all be Mandelbaum.
You know what, Lisa? This is really actually an intervention. We don't want you to be.
We're going
to
drop the sign down.
You know, then you'll just have to pick me up every weekend and drive me home, and I'm okay with that.
When I drive with her, she does this.
He drives fast.
You can't put your foot on the dashboard anymore because of the airbag. That is not safe.
That's right.
So were you driving fast when you came into the studio?
I wasn't driving fast at all. Not at all.
I wasn't either.
No, I was taking my time.
It was a little scary out there.
It was.
Hopefully it's better now, but I don't know. Only Roger knows for sure.
Because I was thinking about the Prince Philip story, and I found myself thinking, I am in the right lane going about 40 miles an hour.
You are something my kind of driver.
Something is wrong here.
Prepared for more snow.
Great.
Yeah.
The voice of doom has spoken. The voice of doom up there.
The man behind the curtain has spoken.
Do I have to call Mr. Skilling to make sure that you have this accurate?
I'm looking at what he looks at.
I think Mr. Skilling's in Hawaii.
Is he?
Yeah, that's right.
Smart man.
We could call him in Hawaii.
Smart man. He's still
work there.
I'm sure he's still sleeping.
One of the nicest people on the face of the earth, Tom Skilling.
Every person who says, oh, you work at WGN, Tom Skilling. It's right.
I thought they would say like Lisa Wolf.
That's next.
It's hard to be nicer than Tom Skilling.
He is exactly
a wonderful man.
What you would want, hope, dream, and exactly who he is on the air.
Well, now I look forward to meeting him because I have not met him.
Ugh.
And Roger?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're
right. Yeah, I know.
Love you, buddy. Love you, buddy.
Talk to you.
All right. All right. So here are the sounds that matter. The top 5 at 5 from the Rocon Show with Anna DeVellantes. Weekday afternoons on 720 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. It is 2:01 in the morning. Time for the news. Here's Roger Badish. Hey.